You're listening to Fakeologist Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to audiochat.fakeologist.com. This is a new and exciting way to communicate with fellow fakeologists around the globe. Each day we compress and post the day's audio into a file that can be big or small. Discover new voices and ideas that talk about media fakery like you never did before. To listen to the live stream, go to s3.fakeologist.com. Now, on with the audio chat.
Hey everybody, it's me, Aberrato, Fakeologist Style. It is September 25th, 2015. It is a Friday. It's the end of the week. I've just come in to try out the audio chat for the day. I made a few changes to some of the voice messages in the audio chat. I may leave it on. I may turn it back off. But in the meantime, I'm over here. If anyone is interested in coming for a chit-chat, come on down. I'll be here for a couple hours. I'm going to put a message at chat.fakeologist.com to see if anyone is interested in coming in. It appears that schedule.fakeologist.com is not being used, so I don't think we'll continue that experiment. That one's going to die on the vine. One extra step seems like too much work. I want to thank all the audio chatters over the last couple of weeks. It's been very busy and very exciting in the audio chat. Thanks, everyone who's managed to come by. Lively chats every day. It's fantastic listening. I'm buried in audio chats and other audios. I'm getting way behind on. There's so many podcasts out there. I do even listen to non-fakeologist podcasts. As many of you will know, I'm a fan of the old Howard Stern. Yeah, I know he's crass and noxious, but he did get more radio listeners than anyone else probably in the history of radio, so one has to mention it the least to that kind of success. One of his favorite sidekicks for 9 years, maybe it was nine, was Artie Lang, and he's a comedian, an overweight New Jerseyite who was very funny, and I really enjoyed him and was frustrated that he quit the show. Because allegedly he was a heroin addict. Artie Lang has been doing a few radio-type shows over the last couple of years, and it looks like he has his own podcast now, which he charges money for, $7, I think, a month. Someone's posting his shows on YouTube. Great. Going back and forth, talking about his departure from the Howard Stern show. I only bring up Howard Stern because without Howard Stern show, I would not have dug into 9/11. So it is important for me to discuss my roots. The Howard Stern show is my radio route to 9/11. Route, R-O-U-T-E, and route, R-O-O-T, both. I can hardly ignore it. I have not listened to the Howard Stern show in the last couple of months. I just haven't had time, and I'm way behind. I haven't listened since June. I don't subscribe to the Sirius broad system satellite service, which is, of course, not a satellite system, but nevertheless, I have not listened to the downloads. He's on Torrent and download a show. If you look for the torrents, someone uploads it and usually strips out that 1 hour of commercials that have creeped back into his broadcast. But I suspect right now he's going back and forth through his podcast or his show and Artie Lang's podcast, just drumming up a little bit of controversy between the two, saying, and Artie is saying some things Howard doesn't like, and it's going back and forth. And I don't know if the drama is real. Drama is often manufactured just to drum up interest. In this case, I think almost for sure it is. My guess is that Artie be creating drama on his podcast, number one, to get attention podcast. That would be the main reason. As soon as you drop the Howard Stern name to a show title, he's going to get hits. That's a strategy. Number two, maybe Howard Stern's contract, because it is expiring at the end of this year, Sirius Satellite Radio, after 10 years, is finally going to go online, go direct to subscribers. And that would revolutionize the concept of pay radio via the internet, for sure. So I think that's quite possible, that Artie is drumming up a controversy to to facilitate a return Howard Stern online show, which I'm going to guess is going to happen. I don't think he's going to go back to Sirius Satellite Radio. I think he's going to try and create one last innovation. And, of course, he probably was more responsible than anyone to bring people to satellite radio. I have no doubt in my mind about that. Now, I don't believe the numbers at all. I think they're probably a myth. They claim it's 27 occult million. 2 plus 7 is 9. I just don't buy that. I think they lie about the numbers, probably by a factor of well, maybe even 10. I really wish there would be a way to know the truth about the numbers, but I doubt it's real. And the numbers they do have, I think, are heavily subsidized. Give away the service. I know when I quit service, they throwing themselves at me just to pay anything. And I just said, forget it. On principle, I have to cancel it. Plus, I didn't like carrying the hardware around between my different vehicles, and I just certainly wasn't going to pay for different vehicles. So I gave up on the Sirius satellite radio, especially since someone was uploading them close to the internet. Because I could wait. Most of the shows are not date specific, so I could wait a couple days to listen. Because, of course, that is the future of radio anyway, podcasting, and it's all delayed listening. Now, there's some shows that I listen to the Humble and Fred show, and they're on Sirius Satellite Radio 2. However, they will upload their show 6 hours after it was live, Sirius, not satellite radio. Getting back to the Stern show, I think Stern will come back, not to satellite. He will do his own thing, do a subscription-based model for the live stream. And he'll probably put a password on his archives as well. I can see that coming. It won't be a money thing for him. It'll just probably be mainly a innovation thing to see if he can drive subscribers. Sure, he'll go to a subscription model as opposed to a donation model. He's just basically piggybacking off the success of Netflix. I think first started with iTunes, selling music at 99 cents, a price point so low that people didn't think about it. And the subscription model, like Netflix, where you just pay a very low rate, again, a low rate that you don't think about, is about $5 or $6 a month, and he'd get all the money as opposed to splitting it with Sirius Satellite Radio. And I think pull it off. That's my guess. Just rampant speculation. That's all I ever do on my broadcast is speculate. Out of the box thinking, but maybe it's not so out of the box. If anyone's interested, I have listened to a lot of the Artie Lang podcasts. Their name's Stern Show, which is not Stern Show. Stern Show on YouTube is uploading them. Then, of course, I use 4K video downloader to rip it to an audio. And then I use BitTorrent Sync, is at getsync.com, GESYNC.com, to get to my smartphone. That program is free for a restricted use, and that works. So I have a pretty complex way of getting these things to my phone, but it appears that YouTube is the primary distribution for media now, whether it be video, whether it be audio. Bad, there's not a easier way to get the audio out of YouTube. YouTube app on smartphones does not run in the background. It takes over the whole phone, which if you use the phone for multi-purposes like I do, doesn't work. Today I listened to the No Agenda show. It was pretty uneventful. The thing I'm most interested actually in the No Agenda show right now is Adam is traveling around the country in an Airstream. And something I've always thought about a little bit, it would be fun to drag around a trailer around at least 48 contiguous states and the 10 provinces. Something I have thought about and I am thinking about. Thought that it would on retirement, just buy an Airstream and drag it between Canada and the southern U.S., plop myself for 6 months there and 6 months here. Talk about living off the land. You're not really living off the land, but you sure are more independent. Of course, you're sort of, a trailer is not a house for sure. It wouldn't be very comfortable for more than two people. Time would be an interesting way because you wouldn't pay any property taxes. Yeah, you pay hookup and camping fees, but potentially they would have the property taxes built into those fees, but you would think it would be cheaper. So if there's any RVers out there, let me know. But Adam is traveling around in an Airstream 23-footer, I believe, and he's using all the cellular connections to broadcast the show. He streams his show, which I don't know why he streams it. I don't know why John doesn't stream it. Whoever is at the on the landline or the wired internet, they should be the one streaming it. But Adam says he's streaming it from his iPhone or his Verizon MiFi. Strange. And it would seem not like a great idea, but apparently he has the bandwidth to it. I just like his actual stories about where he's going. Apparently he passed through Jackson, Wyoming, where apparently there's no state tax, which I think is similar to a lot of states, but also it's where all the big wigs hang out, very high-end elite area, or at least parts of it is. All right, Psyopticon's here.
Hello, Ab. Hello, everyone, if anyone's listening.
Oh, everyone's listening. If they're not listening, they'll listen later.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so what's
today? I don't know what the numbers are. I don't know what the numbers are. We get some pretty good listens. We get a pretty good quantity of listens.
Oh, sure. Sometimes I look on it, and I guess that little map, actually, has got like a number of little red arrows or whatever, and I guess they're all individual listeners, are they? I didn't really understand what that's about. For some reason, Canada's got a satellite dish on it, and that I guess means you or the server. Is that how it works?
I don't know. I haven't looked at that map. Where exactly is the... I don't think it's a satellite dish. I think it's a pair of headphones.
James, that was an interesting thing. You're interested in Rob Ford. That's I listened to that. You put a link on the main page saying that what do people think about him diagnosing himself, as it were, or claiming to be suffering from some sort of stomach cancer or whatever. And I listened to the audio when he was... I don't know who interviewed him, but it was... Yeah, it was very plausible. It was very credible, but it was, I don't know whether it was quite came off, but I can't say I'm persuaded because I don't know the first thing about the guy, but certainly a theatrical sort of fella.
I'm glad you did pay attention and listen to it. I appreciate that because I know it's a local issue. Most people outside of Toronto wouldn't give a toss about it, and I don't blame you, but no, I'm glad you did. The only reason why is because... I lost a real person to cancer. New. And the reason why I enjoyed this person is because I first got into 9/11 and started going through the negative aspects of it back in April 2012. Judy Wood, the nuclear weapons that destroyed the earth or cut it in half. I needed to tell at least one person. So I told this guy who was acquaintance of mine. He was quite flabbergasted, but didn't really offer an opinion one way or the other if he believed me or not, or believed the story. But the point is that this person had cancer and just recently, just this year, started aggressively therapy, and he just died last week.
Oh, that's sad.
I feel kind of bad about it. Well, I feel really bad about it, of course, but it's interesting. I didn't know he had cancer at the time when I started talking to him. I think he got rid of some of the cancer at the time I met him, and then it only just came back in the last year. Then he just started to use chemotherapy, which is just a guaranteed death sentence. But modern medicine doesn't know what else to do, so you do it. I don't think there's almost anyone that wouldn't take the poison only because there is no alternative that is offered.
I lost a grandparent to stomach cancer, and she refused to actually undergo much. She underwent very minor amount of surgery. She was very strict. She gave strict instructions to the surgeon not to remove her her stomach. She had this, you know, I suppose, particularly with women, they're very conscious of, I don't know, what can I say, about perhaps having to suffer a lot.
She only lasted a few months.
Yeah.
Well, I was trying to do some research on stomach cancer because, as you heard in the interview, Rob Ford said he had a sarcoma, which I looked up sarcoma, and that's just a malignant tumor in his stomach. And when he said the whole surgery took 11 hours, I thought, that's the longest. I don't even think heart transplants are 11 hours, so that seemed incredulous in and of itself.
Sure. I suppose it could be a mistake, but I would have thought of that length of time under anaesthetic would be potentially fatal anyway. What do I know, though?
I don't know what the heck he... Because he didn't even say it was stomach cancer, and they're very vague all the time when he was talking about it. And again, my friend went from just a normally built man of about 6 foot into a walking...
Sure. I don't know what the answer is. I, as I said, this one grandparent, she definitely died of cancer. I mean, she refused to undergo radical surgery. I think they said to her, "We're going to have to actually remove your whole stomach and give you a colostomy bag, is it, or whatever?" And she refused that, and so she insisted on having just minimal amount of growth or whatever removed, and only lasted a matter of months afterwards. So. Certainly, it kills. You know, I don't think there's any dispute that cancer kills people. It's whether you have undergo surgery or not. It's nevertheless, fatal for a large number of people, tragically. But the one thing I did notice about Rob Ford is that the interviewer who said to him, "You're looking really good, Mr. Ford. You know, you've lost a lot of weight, obviously, and everything else." And I would have thought, well, where are these photos? You know, I mean, potentially, perhaps Rob Ford has undergone some sort of stomach surgery. Perhaps he's had one of those. Gastric bands, and he's going to come out a new man, because he was in the photographs I'm looking at him here earlier from last year and before. He is morbidly obese, it's disgustingly overweight. So perhaps he did actually undergo some sort of cancer, some sort of perhaps they're disguising gastric band surgery, which seems to be becoming quite commonplace in Britain now, and presumably in Canada and elsewhere, and disguising that as being a cancerous. Cancer surgery, and therefore the loss of weight would be explained in that way as well. So I don't know. I don't know the first thing about the guy, but he seems to be like fairly lewd. The stories about him of the sort of prostitutes, and there was something about talking about licking pussy or something at one stage, and he was kind of like a crude guy for somebody who's reached well, it's quite an important political position, isn't it? Really, but and whether those footage of him saying these things and making. Comments was genuine, I don't know, but maybe that's the story then. He's actually undergone gastric band surgery, and they've disguised it as suffering from cancer, and it would perhaps hide the fact that it's somewhat shameful, isn't it, that somebody's got to such a more...
I was...
Hello? There. Oh, yeah, I saw you... I don't know what these little logos
are. Do you know I was cut off?
Yeah, sure, I worked out you'd dropped out, but I didn't know whether anyone was listening, so I just rambled on, but... Yeah, maybe he's undergone some sort of surgery. What I did notice, there were no photos of him. The interviewer was saying, "You're looking so much better, Mr. Ford."
I appreciate
that.
So
where are these photos?
No, that was a radio show.
Yeah,
that was a radio show. But I guess all you could possibly do. He's still an active counselor, so not nearly in the media like he used to be. But you could do a Google. Search of
I couldn't find anything of him post surgery. I will say I couldn't find
any of current photos of him.
I couldn't find any. There were none there that sort of showed him post surgery, as it were.
He released.
There's one or two of them with his head shaved.
Well, after this,
I get an ab. Yeah, there are quite a few photos of him, but they don't actually show him losing significant amounts of weight, which is what it says here. That. He looks much the same. There's one or two pictures of him supposedly in hospital with pipes hanging out of him. There's one here in the Toronto. King Master. Whoever you are. That was strange.
That must be Master.
Somebody sent me a message with a hat and a heart on it, whatever that means. Anyway. Yeah.
Where? Send you the message.
Yeah. And left.
Where did they send you the message?
They sent me a sort of private message, and it says... a picture of a greater than sign, then a three, and then a love heart. Anyway, whatever. But yeah, there's one or two pictures of Rob with like this Rob Ford with this sort of fluffy hair that you you associate with cancer treatment or chemotherapy or whatever it is. And so they've either gone to some effort with the photoshopping to sort of put that sort of hair on him. But then the later photos show him completely shaven headed, and I don't know. He doesn't seem to have lost any weight whatsoever. He looks fatter than ever, yeah. Rather than contrary to what was said.
That's what I was saying, and I don't know if today that interview was from this week. And my point was, I was trying to make before I got cut off with this useless cellular system, was that my friend who was on chemo, and he turned into a skeleton. Because inevitably the chemo makes you ill, upset stomach. You cannot keep food down, so you don't tend to eat when your stomach is very upset. And he must have lost half his weight, and then, of course, his cancer just spread all over his body, and then he just died because he's suffocating in his own shell of an existence, which is awful. But the point is that unless Rob Ford had some miraculous recovery, miraculous doctor who does go unnamed,
but they're all going to be gagged on it. Medics are pretty much, I mean, it happens in Britain that they actually state, you know, when somebody claims that they've suffered some terrible treatment in hospital, the staff in the hospital are all gagged, you know, and told that, you know, due to clinical, you know, procedures privacy. Or, you know, clinical privacy, nothing can be stated to the contrary anyway. So you can always, actually, you can probably claim you're suffering from any illness in confident that no doctor is going to actually contradict you and say, not true. I don't know. I don't know anything about the guy. I would have thought what little I know of cancer is possibly it's triggered by obesity anyway, but what do I know?
Well, Rob Ford turned into an international celebrity. May not have reached your shores, but yeah, it went America-wide. It went America-wide. That was the whole point, really, of his celebrity. I was going to celebutard, but I still think it was a hoax,
I don't have
much to go on other than what I know of real cancer patients.
What were the mechanics of it if it was a hoax? What was the purpose, the agenda? To extract sympathy, public sympathy towards him? Well,
he's one of those populist people.
I don't know. I guess you sort of weigh out what do I think about him, and I kind of think, well, I don't know, happy-go-lucky, fat, sort of smiling, grinning sort of character with a, I don't know, populist, as you say, down-to-earth and pretty crude, whatever, but I don't know. I guess you tend to think you're thinking more about him than you would do before, but, you know, thinking he's defeated something like cancer, but beyond that, it doesn't really make much difference. I mean, does it make him more electable, or would you think I wouldn't vote for him because there's a possibility he'll have to bow out mid-term to undergo more therapy or whatever, if he's had any at all. I don't know. I haven't followed the story enough to wonder. That interview sounded a little bit too, I don't know. I mean, I guess all politicians want to actually normally want to downplay their ill health. We've had a few in Britain. There was like a right-hand man in the Thatcher government called Michael Heseltine who suffered some sort of heart attack mid-term, and he went to great lengths to sort of say there was nothing wrong with him. Well, not great lengths. He downplayed anybody who said otherwise, and, you know, he kind of told the situation as if it was nothing much to report. But I don't know. Hopefully somebody else will come and chat. I think Ab's dropped out again.
All right, let's try that again. Sorry, Psyopticon. I keep getting interrupted tonight.
That's all right. No. I was just thinking what the propaganda vector of it was a fake.
Well,
but
it was a fake. This is my thought. My thought is that he was a populist mayor. He was tending to win just being the everyman. Uh-huh. And there's another guy who was trying to win all the time. He's run for many levels of office, a little bit of a silver spooner.
Uh-huh.
Couldn't win dog catcher of the year. And I think that somehow in some Masonic ritual, they either created the story or the guy went along with the story to through all kinds of trials and tribulations to lose favor with the public or the section of his voters that could be swayed either way.
Uh-huh.
And in the end, maybe he was winning and he had to make an excuse to leave the so-called election. That was the cancer reason. I do think possibility. It seems ridiculous, I know, and it seems like we're stretching things, but other than that, dropped out of the mayoral race, the renewal mayoral race, because he would have gone for another term. And then in comes this silver spooner who I think made more, just a bit more than squeaked in office.
Yeah.
So that's it. That's really, it's not that interesting, I realize.
Well, no, it's all right. You know, it's always interesting to watch especially somewhere else in another part of the world. I was saying that we've had, generally though, when, you know, when politicians have actually gone down with something pretty serious, like there was a Thatcher ally called Michael Heseltine, Lord Heseltine, and when Thatcher was in government, he suffered some sort of heart attack mid-term. I forget what he was, like trade and industry secretary or something like that. And he was very, very keen to downplay anything that much had happened to him, you know, just a little twinge or something or other, and he'd, you know, had undergone open heart surgery or something or other, and just very much downplayed it and, you know, refused to even discuss it. Whereas Rob Ford seems to have gone in big there with, like, quite a lengthy interview all about it, and I don't know, whatever. Wish him all the best if it's genuinely ill. I don't know anything about him, but, you know, he's looks like a character. Maybe that's, you know, whatever.
Yeah, well, believe me, there's almost zero interest in, even in my own city, about it. The chattering classes reviled him, and the Vox Populi admired him. And the mayor in Toronto has almost no power. He has the same power as any local councillor. And
really, just a chair of a meeting and stuff, you know. Just
That's right.
They're going that way in Britain, pal. I think there's currently... It's very ceremonial, the role is here. I'm not sure really what happens in London. We've got Lord Mayor of London and then the Mayor of London, the two separate posts. But Mayor of London.
The Lord Mayor of the Square Mile, city-state. The Lord Mayor is the Mayor of the city-state of the City of London, right? Which is in Square Mile in the middle.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's a city-state. Even the Queen has to get permission to go into that area.
Uh-huh.
There's three city-states in the world. Vatican, City of London, and Washington.
City-states. There's different Lord Mayors. I think there's Lord Mayor of Birmingham near me, but I don't really follow anything about it, really. But it's a very ceremonial title even now, isn't it? Just a sort of, I don't know, whatever. Well, I never knew that. I never knew the Lord Mayor was the Lord Mayor of the city, rather than the city as in the square mile. I never knew that, Ab.
Well, look it up. I might be wrong.
Right. You are right. No, you're right. I don't even know who it is. Who is it? I don't even say who it is.
Either.
Oh, there we are. Henry Fitz Aylwin de Lunderstone. That's what it means. Oh, no, that's the inaugural holder. Sorry.
Could be wearing some occult around his kind of occult symbolism. I think they're considered part of the SMOM, the Sovereign Military Order of Malta.
Uh-huh. God, and Dick Whittington was apparently one of the Lord Mayors. But anyway, yeah. Oh, well, I don't wish Rob Ford any ill, but yeah, it's kind of a curious story there. But there's certainly pictures there with him very fluffy-haired, as if he has actually undergone whatever it is that causes changes to hair growth and whatever. Cancer, chemotherapy,
Major story, no matter what level, I like to investigate. One of them.
Oh, sure.
There's no different from all the big ones. May not be any guns and children dying, but it's still worth a look.
Mm-hmm. Did you see what's been happening over here? There was a right-wing newspaper pundit called Katie Hopkins, and she's just announced that the photograph, the imagery of that... Turkish child, that Turkish baby supposedly washed ashore in, Syrian baby washed ashore onto the Turkish beaches was staged, as she called it. And she's sort of associated with a right-wing political party called UKIP that demand that we pull up the drawbridge to stop any more European immigration. And it's kind of discredited the accusations of fakery by association, you know, that you've got these right-wing loons, you know, the sort of right-wing tittle-tattle journalists who are, you know, talking about, you know, nationalism and flag-waving sort of whatever in it. And she's effectively uses, in a sense, to neutralise, you know, any further support for such an allegation of media fakery. It's, you're aligning yourself with right-wing... you know, sort of semi-fascist newspaper columnists who are making the same claim. So it's DBA, as I think you called it, didn't you?
Oh, that's Simon called it that. Yeah, no, I didn't. That didn't make it over here.
No.
No, I enjoyed your comment on the World War II. I thought that was really well done. That seems very plausible. And then you're digging up of the German bomb manuals. It's ridiculous.
Well, I thought so, yeah. I mean, it was kind of, it's 25, 30 years before I was born, but I tested it on a relative of mine to see whether they believed what I was saying, and they just poo-pooed it. Ridiculous. Never heard anything so stupid, was the response I got. So it's kind of like, you know, people who lived through the war are actually worse than those who didn't in terms of vulnerability to propaganda. You know, to this day, they still live by what they were told in 1939 or whenever it was, you know, but, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Certainly lots of aspects of the war were real. As kids, we used to dig up unfired, or whatever the word is, live rounds, live machine gun rounds from a Browning half-inch machine gun rounds we used to dig up. We'd dig them up like as if they were like pebbles, you know. You'd find a certain area where American air bases had been, you know, and certain area of crops and fields, and you could actually walk over a field and see half-inch Browning live machine gun rounds from are they Liberators, US, you know, the American aeroplanes, Liberators and Fortresses, Flying Fortresses, and somehow these bullets were just lying over the field. So certainly there were aeroplanes, there were American, you could go too far down the rabbit hole of saying, right, nothing happened in the Second World War. Well, I'm quite clear that there were American bombing raids carried out over Germany, and presumably vice versa, you know, German Luftwaffe planes came over to Britain and whatever, but and certainly they carried live ammunition on them and presumably live bombs. But what actually happened there, I haven't got a clue. I really can't. So, you know, it's almost been lost in the mists of time whilst we're still celebrating or commemorating, shall I say, the victories of various battles and everything else and the losses and suffered and such like, you know, real or exaggerated or not, you know. Nevertheless, we've sort of lost sight of what actually happened or anyway. So, yeah, it's still propaganda rather than historical accuracy, I'm afraid. It's typo,
oh, yes.
Right?
Just gonna be lost in the sands of time. I agree. I like your theory about the time bombs. That was good.
I don't know if that was a popular film in America, in North America, but it was very popular over here. It was called. It had a character in it, a cartoon character called. Comedic character called. Alf Garnett, and he played the supposedly he lived in the during the Blitz, and his whole street was blown to pieces, and he was sort of refused to leave his home and everything else until, you know, the wrecking ball sort of has knocked all his neighbors' houses down and everything. And it was kind of trapped in that era. It's kind of propaganda sort of weaved into comedy sort of thing. But it was I don't say that's where the insight into the time bomb came from, but I won't say I'm sure. I just find it very difficult on multiple levels that anybody could, for a start, fire rocket bombs from Germany, very primitive things from the continent, you know, from France and Belgium, and could actually get them to land in East London without overshooting and landing into the posh end of West London or Central London. You know, it seemed to be just too much of a, you know, too much of an achievement, you know, all those years ago, when even now we're told that sort of the, you know, drone aircraft have much more limited than they'd like us to believe and stuff. So take it back 70 years, and you're almost sort of an era where people were sort of winding up. It was pretty much how they worked, apparently. They had to be wound up a certain number of times to determine how many miles they flew before they dropped down and landed on their target. But so it was all incredibly hit and miss. Well, whether the technology of these so-called rocket bombs ever existed at all, that's what I doubt now.
Precision in those days couldn't have been good enough to land it on the right street, number one. I don't even know if they can do it today.
No, I don't think so.
We're rather weary of ICBMs and guided missiles. I'm weary of it. I'm not doubting it completely, but I'm weary of the claims.
Definitely.
Billy Connolly said there aren't a lot of places where you can test these things. Like a nuclear bomb salesman can come up and say, hey, I'd like to show you what this can do.
Uh-huh. I think if you took it to its extreme, this Second World War propaganda, which is, I don't know why it interests me, because it was long before my time, but you do have to wonder whether there was close coordination between the Luftwaffe and their British, there were actually coordination with where bombing would actually take place, which is, most people would just reject that as just as absolute nonsense. But, hello, Master of None.
Here's Master of None. Hold on a sec. Let me grant them talking powers. Master of None, welcome to the audio chat.
Thank you.
Oh, welcome.
It's nice
new
to
voice
talk to you.
In the audio chat, everybody. Where do you hail from, Master of None?
I'm in Seattle.
All right. Another Seattleite. Seattleite. Similar to Kayham. She's from your area.
Yeah, probably not too far. I'm excited to someday meet her.
Well, she'll be very eager to meet you. Say hi to Psyopticon. He's here too.
Hello there. Nice to meet you.
Hello.
Hiya. You should be mistress of none, surely. Not master of none. But anyway, you've got a very good radio voice there.
Oh, thank you.
Mistress of none, you're a very good writer. Wow. Put a lot of thought into your posts. I really appreciate way more than I would ever put into any post anywhere. So I appreciate your thoughtfulness.
Oh, thank you. So what are you guys talking about tonight?
Well, we're talking about a little bit of World War II mixed in with Rob Ford, our international celebutard mayor. Well, past celebutard mayor. Just a hodgepodge, really. The audio chat, so go any which way you want. Would you mind just giving a little background on yourself, Master of None? Because I feel I know nothing about you.
Sure. So I live in Seattle, and I'm 44 years old, and I really have absolutely no one to talk to, and never have, about any of the kinds of things Fakeologist talks about. And so I've always been kind of a lurker on a lot of different boards, but this is the first one I've ever participated on by writing in, and it's also the first one I've participated on through talking, so this will be kind of a new format for me. But
wow.
Yeah, but pretty much my whole entire life I have known that this was, you know, a game and a fraud and wrong and all of that stuff, and kind of got flack for it my whole life, even though I'm not a difficult person. But, you know, I would ask questions that people didn't want to answer regarding religion and school and bureaucracy, and you know, it's just been frustrating for a very, very long time. And then today, you know, as an adult, it's very hard because, you know, the older you are, the more people do not want to talk about this.
More plugged into the system they are. More invested in the system, like you eloquently laid out. So easy to explain why people don't buck the system.
Yeah, and it's really hard because living with that kind of artificiality all the time is such a drain. Just so draining. It just takes all of the authenticity out of, you know, friendships and life. And you know, the older I get, there are fewer and fewer things that I can talk with people about on any kind of, you know, more depth level. I mean, everything is just feels very kind of superficial and really unsatisfying.
Oh, I totally understand. Yeah.
Today was kind of interesting because there's a particular technology that I use that a few people in my part of the country also use. And I connected with two of them today, and one guy was in his late 70s, and the other guy was 81, and it's the best conversation I've had in person for maybe years.
What kind of technology are you talking about?
Well, it's something called bioacoustics, and was developed by a woman named Sherry Edwards in the 80s, and it analyzes the voice to determine what is lacking or what is overexpressed in the form of a toxin, a vitamin, genetics, whatever. And then she can feed back frequency to balance that out. And I know this probably sounds bizarro, but there's actually a lot of research behind it. And even drug companies have used it to better understand, I think, Parkinson's and something else. So anyway, it's a tool that I'm trying to learn well enough to use on people. And the two people in my part of the state who do it are in their 70s and 80s. And so we had coffee, and it was so great because we talked a little bit about that, but then we talked about so many other things, and it was just exhilarating.
What kind of things made you, what kind of things were exhilarating that you talked about? Anything fakeologist related?
Well, I would say yes, in that one of the things that one of the guys brought up was that apparently salamanders can regrow a limb or a tail if they lose one, but a frog can't. And he's a Boeing engineer, and so he was talking about the science behind voltage in the body and what kind of reparative value that it has. And we were just talking about how much we are lied to in every way in this realm regarding health, you know, just all of the stuff they tell you that puts limitations on healing of all kinds. And reinforces the whole myth of prescription medication and insurance and blah, blah, blah. And you know, it was just one of those conversations where you get this wonderful feeling of, yeah, there's actually more out there. There's all kinds of great stuff that we could utilize and tap into, but we've just got this big, huge, heavy, soul-sucking cloud called government that makes it all impossible.
Interesting. Very good. And there, he's coming at it from an alternative therapy point of view. So, of course, he would be somewhat out of the system.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm constantly trying all these different kinds of health approaches on myself because I just feel like there's going to be a day where someone comes to me and says, they've told me I have pancreatic cancer, I have a month left, and they're preparing to die. And I want to be able to say, oh, no, no. Here's what we're going to do. We have these 10 options of things that are going to fix whatever your problem is. And in fact, I used cannabis oil to heal my dog from cancer. I used bone stock to heal her arthritis. I am in the process of totally healing a tooth that probably needed a root canal and cap and all of that. And I'm just finding out for myself how powerful these things are and things that, you know, your dentist will never tell you, your doctor will never tell you, yet I'm finding that they work. They really work.
That was a tooth of yours or your dog's?
My dog's cancer and my dog's arthritis. And then my tooth.
Tooth, oh, okay. I had a root canal just recently and it wasn't too bad.
Yeah, it was kind of a test, though. It was kind of an opportunity to apply something that I'd read about for a long time and test out for myself and see if it was true or possible. And I have been totally amazed. There was a hole that I could feel on the inside of my mouth with my tongue, and it is about a fourth of the size. And then on the outside, there was a part that chipped off, but it is growing underneath. Like, it feels totally solid in my mouth, and it didn't, you know, a month and a half ago. So I'm just totally impressed with, you know, these things that are out there that you just don't hear about.
I think Ab just dropped out, but I don't. I'm sure other people are still listening. But yeah, so it's a good. I'm sorry, I'm doing two things at the same time here. I'm listening to you and also reading your excellent post on the audio chat there about Dallas Goldbuggery and everything else. Sorry, I didn't want to confuse what you were saying, but it's an excellent post you've put there, as Ab has already said.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, that's really boring. I was saying to Ab the other day, the status DGB theory is so boring. It's gone on now for several years, hasn't it? And it's kind of like, what can I say? It's an easy hook to begin with, but once you've seen through it and somebody's actually sat you down and sort of said, you know, okay, this is why it's impractical, et cetera, et cetera, it's kind of really boring and just the same old theme over and over again, but here he is Ab again. It's a great post you put there, though.
Thank you. I wanted to reply to it when the first one came out with John Lebon and Frank, and just didn't really have time, and so thought about it today and added that part on. But I don't mind that theories are not completely provable, but it just feels just contrived. I just feel like he doesn't even put enough effort into it to be respectful of the people who are listening.
He doesn't believe it himself. I don't. Well, who are we talking about? Dallas Goldbug certainly doesn't. I don't know about Frank, I guess both of them, in fact, they don't really believe their own propaganda or whatever the word is. There's generational issues as well. It was something that he refused to I forget who he said John F. Kennedy had. Oh, Jimmy Carter, of course, wasn't it? He said John F. Kennedy had sort of been reincarnated, as it were, as Jimmy Carter, except it was like a 20-something year difference in age there, which is, you know, pretty difficult to pull off, sort of thing, you know. But anyway, whatever. Whatever floats your boat, as it were. Yeah, it's a really good point there. Huge, you know, it's gone into it in great depth. And as you say, like the public servants, supposedly, you know, wouldn't, according to Frank, it's much easier to have these actors and playing multiple roles, etc. But as you say yourself, it's just money, isn't it? Really, you can pretty much persuade anybody to do anything if the price is right. And also the threat of blackmail after they've sort of compromised themselves in some criminal way or whatever. Then. Whatever,
yeah.
Good post. And I hope I wish we just see off. I mean, this is a fairly recent thing, isn't it? This Dallas Goldbugger. It's only like 1 or 2 years it's been going. I guess that Ed Sheerini's been around a little bit longer, but it's kind of shallow stuff. But whatever. I shouldn't perhaps say it while Frank isn't here to defend himself, but hopefully he'll join in and pipe up and tell everyone why we're all wrong. But
well, I was a little intrigued. I have seen the Dallas Goldbug website or his YouTube videos or whatever years ago. I saw them, and it was interesting. It wasn't super compelling to me. But every time Frank would come on, I kept having this feeling, oh, okay, Frank, give me your quick summary of what this is about, and if I'm interested, I'll check it out further. And every single time, it just was so just kind of lobbed out there without any substance. And when John LeBon, you know, finally said, hey, here's a forum, give it to us in a nutshell, I just went, oh, okay, so, yeah, I don't need to pursue that anymore.
I guess it's just one of many distractions and straw men or whatever, you know. Well, how did you get into fakery research? You know, it was 9/11 or prior to that.
Well, like I said, you know, I've pretty much always looked at the world and just said, this is, all of this is a fraud. There's all this artificial complexity that's added just to create busy work for people. So I always have had that. And then when 9/11 happened, I was very busy in my personal and professional life. And so I wasn't watching any video of any kind for years. So I never even saw video footage of anything 9/11 until, you know, the last few years, really. I really like podcasts. I love conversation. I love audio stuff. So I listen to tons and tons and tons of information, conversations, podcasts, etc. I used to be a voracious reader, but in the last 15 years, I have hardly had time. If I'm reading, it's usually for work or for something that I need to learn, but not, you know, not researchy stuff for fakeology things. But, you know, you're in this world long enough that you start to draw conclusions and see patterns and relationships, you know, who's promoting who, who's not, blah, blah, blah. And you just start to kind of get a sense of what is real and what is not. And so when 9/11 happened, I knew that there was something very fake about it, but I didn't have time to do anything about it. I felt like it was enough that I knew that it was not true. Beyond that, I didn't have much time to do anything with it. Over the years, I was interested in a lot of other different kinds of topics, you know, a lot of natural health kinds of stuff, just government junk in general. And then for many years, when I heard the Judy Wood theory, which is now embarrassing to say, but it made sense to me because I just, for the little video that I saw and for what I heard when she spoke, it just kind of made more sense to me than the myriad of other Alex Jones-like things, you know? And then I discovered Fakeologist through the Marcus Allen Truth in 7 Minutes and through Hoaxbusters Call. And there were just a lot of things that kept bringing me back to Fakeologist. And so that's probably been the thing I've been most interested in lately, all the different conversations with people related to that.
Sure, sure. Good body of research, really, if you start putting your feelers out. You know, there's... to be honest, I personally prefer the written text because it kind of like has gone through a sort of, what can I call it, a prior editing process before it's even been published, or hopefully has. But, you know, tends to, I'm not really somebody who can sort of put down 3 hours of time and say I'll listen to that particular show or whatever. But I know lots of people who are, and it, perhaps things are a bit more fluent, and, you know, can also have input from multiple individuals, which you can't have in a written text usually, so... Yeah, there's some huge amount of really good work there. I guess I attribute most of my enlightening, shall I say, to Clues Forum, of course, but had a falling out with them. But they nevertheless have got the best of the research is there in a sort of best presentation as well. But there's loads of good stuff out there. You're picking up individuals who have quite often... How do you feel about sort of following people who you know have got some sort of limited weakness in their narrative or in their alternative narrative? Like, I want to think of somebody in particular, like... What's the guy in Australia? Jungle Surfer, I think he calls himself, and he's got some sort of obsession with people being transgender or whatever, who obviously aren't, like Michelle Obama and people like that.
Michelle Obama.
Yeah, but otherwise, I mean, he's quite a good analysis there. Even when he's wrong in sense of, like, you know, not particularly good in his studying of imagery and that sort of thing, he nevertheless sort of opens people's minds anyway, which is just as good as. Is being correct, really, as long as other people are like homing in and, you know, looking at this sort of thing for themselves at the right level of analysis, rather than just accepting a photograph in the newspaper is genuine, to actually study it under a microscope sort of thing and critically analyze pictures that are being used to persuade us of one thing or another.
Well, they're throwing so much at us all the time. You know, there's always the latest whatever, and I think it's impossible to know everything about everything, to have time to learn about everything. And I do think that the big danger for all of us is it's okay to speculate about something as long as you're very clear that, hey, this is just speculation. Mm-hmm. But if people are really adamant and it isn't fully vetted, that is a problem, because I do discount people who, you know, I know that something that they're saying from my own experience is totally wrong. It does make me question, are they, you know, legitimate or not? And sometimes I do think it's an honest blind spot, or, you know, they just still haven't made it all the way through all of the research to land in the right place yet. But yeah, it creates questions.
Sure. There's some good material out there, though, nevertheless. You know, it's a slow discovery process, because I'm much the same age as you are, and it's been, you know, I won't say I certainly just didn't discover that 9/11 was a hoax, an entire hoax, a media hoax, until long after 2001. So it was, took many years of sort of, you know, it was also sort of a case of actually, as you say yourself, like putting the research to one side and getting on with life in various other ways. However depressing it is, having that backdrop of there being what you believe at the time to have been this horrific terror attack, etc. I mean, it has a deep psychological effect on us all, really, and it was, you know, if in hindsight, we all should have actually sat down and said, right, I'm taking a month off work. I'm going to study this intently and everything else. But of course, that's not a practicality for most people. So it's lots of people there through just lack of time have never really been able to scrutinize this sort of propaganda that just flashes on their screen and the sort of mesmerizing effect that it has on people and, you know, critical thinking sort of temporarily suspended while they're watching it and whatever else. But it's rather sad, really. It's, in many cases, it's a lack of time that prevents people from studying these stories to discover whether they're true or not, and more often they're not. But it's a very great relief, actually, discovering all of these similar, like-minded people as well, you know, with similar sort of insights into the world and, you know, reach the same conclusions in different ways and sharing our wisdom in how we arrived at where we are with covering media fakery and whatever. It's in a sense, it's therapeutic to actually hear other people's own experiences.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I love listening to the podcasts, and even though I don't know these people personally, it is just so nice to get to know them over time, just listening to podcasts, because it is nice to know that there's actual, real, live people out there, you know, that not everybody has bought into this.
Yeah, definitely. I think of Miles Mathis. He's quite regularly in the news, the alternative discussion arena or sphere, as it were. It's a guy in, I forget where he is. I chatted with him on the phone a few months ago, and he was a nice fellow. He's portrayed himself as an artist, in part, but also, you know, a truth seeker and everything else. But quite a few of his pieces, his papers, which he publishes as PDFs on his website, mileswmathis.com, are groundbreaking, really. I like what he wrote about. He wrote quite a lengthy paper about Abraham Lincoln's assassination, and it was eye-opening. It was really like, you know, I just assumed nothing quite makes sense about that. As you say, there's so many of these flaws in the official narratives. Like, you got supposedly the assassin of Lincoln was this guy, Booth, wasn't it? John Wilkes Booth, and supposedly it was a British asset. And you'd think, well, you know, how can that be? How can the assassin of sort of, I don't know, whatever, in a theatre and everything else. And Mathin goes in quite detail and pulls it all apart. And sort of, I won't spoil the end line, but one of his essays is, you know, which is on his website, is about Lincoln's assassination, which to me was astonishingly well written and very, very plausible. I'm not saying it's right, but it's extremely plausible. But it was faked. The bottom line is that Lincoln's assassination was faked, and he was dying anyway of, or had already died, or was dying of a very serious ailment that was, you know, nevertheless went along with
it. Do you mean Lincoln, the Marfan? Was he dying of Marfan?
I'm just trying to find it now. I can put the link in if I find it. He's done so many papers. I don't know if this is the work of one man or not, but a huge number of them. It's one every two or three days. It'll be quite an extensive. But the one on Lincoln, let me just search for Lincoln, it'll be easier. Spell that. Lincoln assassination was another manufactured event, he says. I take you through the whole thing using both old and new evidence. He published that on 31st of May last year. I'll drop it in at the bottom there. www.milesmathis.com/lincoln.pdf. He says, yeah, I forget what he said the ailment that he was supposedly suffering from, but Lincoln apparently had multiple doctors diagnose him as suffering from a terminal illness, and never got it. Went, and Lincoln apparently went along with the hoax. And, you know, he realised that he couldn't possibly complete the second term of presidency, so he allowed the hoax to pretend that he'd been assassinated, and then quietly crawled away to die of natural causes somewhere. That's Mathis's view. It's, I mean, I'm not American, so it doesn't quite hold the same interest. Although it's one of those pivotal events that, you know, we all want to know what happened, really. But the official version, this idea of this Booth character jumping off the stage, you know, and shooting him in a theatre and everything else, is doesn't stand up, really, does it? I don't suppose it stood up to scrutiny 160 odd years ago, whatever it was. But even now, you know, I think we are getting more critically minded. I can look at stories now and I think, that just doesn't make sense, you know? And I'm kind of like, not sure that would have been the case 50 years ago, 100 years ago, whatever. It's the propaganda has actually improved in somewhat considerably, in fact, that our credibility is, you know, our critical analysis has improved over the decades and centuries, I would think. But anyway.
It's so funny because, you know, when I was younger, I was at, you know, I have been to Auschwitz. I have been to the Anne Frank House. I have been to the Ford Theater where Lincoln was shot. And I would love to go and see those places again now with this new information.
Sure, sure. Did you read that thing from Mathis there?
I didn't read the Lincoln one. I read the Manson one, and I read, I think, the Kennedy one. And the hours of research he puts in, it just must be unbelievable. And again, okay. I love reading, but podcasts work so much better for me because I can listen while I, you know, garden and clean and walk dogs and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, sure. Well, things work for different people. Yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's I don't know what it is about the written text. I guess I just like the idea that somebody's actually put an awful lot of time as a wordsmith into it and perfecting what they're saying and stressing the right bits and pulling out weak points and everything else. You know, just the idea that it's undergone revisions of what to improve its quality. But I don't know, whatever. Everything's different. I wasn't really brought up on radio somehow. I don't know why. I've obviously got one in the car and in the house, but really turn it on much, as it were. Just a CD in or something and listen to that. But yeah,
I've always loved radio, and I also have always loved books, and I love real mail. Like, I still do real mail, you know. I like to write letters. I think it's such a great way to really have a record of things in real life. There's nothing like it, you know.
Yeah, yeah, so still some old things still have their attractions. He's put another paper on there about Marilyn Monroe. She's another one who, her death, he says, was faked. I don't know what happened to her if she didn't die. But what do you feel about this notion of a dead celebrity program, the idea that people are sort of whisked off to Fantasy Island somewhere or other, some sort of hidden Caribbean idyll, you know, where they live out their lives away from the media glare and whatever. But that's what Mathis says happened to Monroe, and others have said the same about Princess Diana and whoever else. I don't know. But
into the idea. I think it's sure possible. I really do. In fact, when I was in high school, I did a speech in my speech class on, it was supposed to be like a humorous, informative speech, and I did it on Elvis being alive. And there was, you know, a book at the time, I think called Elvis Lives, and he'd been spotted like at a donut store or something. And at the time, it was just funny, but I do think that it's all media creation. I mean, everything that's media is to influence us. So why wouldn't actors be used in that way?
Oh, sure. Yeah. It's possible. I don't know quite how. I mean, one thing, I think I've given the example before, that Prince William and Kate Middleton, you know, when they were, before they were married, they were living in Wales, you know, in a fairly small area of Wales. But not once did the media ever reveal exactly where they lived and everything, for security reasons, which is understandable. But just the way that the media could actually smooth over what, you know, there was a pressing public desire to want to know where they lived and what sort of circumstances they were living in and, you know, what the house they were in and everything else. And yet the media served its purpose and kept the whole thing under wraps. And to this day, nobody knows where they were living, sort of thing, except that they were in Wales, in North Wales. And so it shows just how people can actually disappear. There's the future King of England. He's pretty much disappeared off the media radar screen for security reasons, but how difficult would it be to actually do it for another reason, which is to literally vanish people from, you know, having written them off as dead or suicided or whatever else, you know? So people do are vanished, you know, from, you know, and it's certainly the media was never going to actually blow the whistle on where they're living and everything else. So I guess that could be said of, you know, the people who supposedly, I mean, what do you feel about the Vixen report that Hoi Polloi published? It was like he puts forward the case that most of these people are fictitious, and there's some dispute there that some of them were actually actors and they were vanished, you know, so there were multiple possibilities for where the 9/11 victims actually went. You know, some of them never existed except on paper in the first place, and therefore they were easy enough to write off as, you know, lost in the rubble.
You could also expand on your, where are you on the 9/11 mythology? What's your...
Me?
You subscribe... No, we know you. We know yours pretty well. Master of None. Is there an abbreviation? Can we call you... Do you have a short form of your name or perhaps a Christian name?
My Christian name is pretty darn unusual, so I don't ever really use it for this kind of thing. But you could just call me Master.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
I have a
so...
slave mentality, though, when I call people Master.
Well, I really tried
spot.
To think of a name that was accurate for me, like that was true even beyond Fakeology, and I'm very much a Jane of all trades. But
all
I
right,
kind
Jane.
Of liked Master of None because it's a double entendre. I'm not in charge of anyone but me. And I am a Jane of all trades, master of none. So that's why I chose it.
Well, I'm kind of already latching onto the Jane, if you don't mind.
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
So 9/11.
Stomp on Psyopticon, but go ahead. Go ahead, Master.
So 9/11. At the time, I wasn't watching TV. I was very busy with personal and professional stuff for like a 3-year period around that time. And I saw video footage that day. I was actually working for the government at the time, and they closed everything down, I think. And so I ended up seeing a lot of the footage that day. But beyond that, I never really saw footage for years and years. I would listen to different people's theories about it, and I always knew that there was just something off and wrong. But everything I was hearing just made it more confusing. And so... probably 8 years ago, I heard about Judy Wood, and I just kind of put it in that box for a few years. And then Fakeologist, even like 4 years ago, I think, made me kind of question that. What?
Did you listen to Marcus for a while? Marcus Allen?
I did, although I don't remember much about what you said about 9/11 specifically. Then I let go of the Judy Wood thing, and it's interesting because... there have been different things that have come up that in retrospect, not just with 9/11, but other things like, just so many things. Like I had a client who was a first responder to Hurricane Katrina and, you know, there's just been different incidences like that where I've had one-to-one personal connections with people who had inside information about it. And so it's strange because some of the things I hear about these different events make it sound like there is truth to some of them, but there are also things that make it seem like these things are exaggerated or used, you know, to forward an agenda. So I kind of try to take each incident, you know, by each incident. But, you know, the thing about 9/11, when it happened, I was in New York in December or January after it happened, and we were on the subway. And the subway did not stop right under the World Trade Center, but the stops before and after that, where we got off, they had bulletin boards and the walls and everything completely covered with pictures of missing people. And,
you know,
that's the kind of thing that I think about now. I go, so what was that? You know, were those people really missing? Is that proof that there were people who were missing and died? Was that part of the propaganda? So, you know, I try to take my own experience, the things that I've heard, the themes that I notice, and try and make sense of what does all of that mean. And it's just one of those weird things. What were those flyers?
Were they movie props or came down?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, at the time, it would have been kind of sacrilegious to take a picture. And now I wish I had taken a picture because it would be very interesting to look up some of those names.
Well, the names would be probably, the pictures would be really identifiable on the different memorial sites, and of course some of them duplicated into the Vixim report on cluesforum.info. I would say you were stumbling upon a movie set that wasn't reassembled or just old movie props that were repositioned or positioned in that place on that day. Or that, yeah, I guess it would be on that day. So, yeah, that makes it real. It feels real because you know you're in a real place and there's real artifacts. But are they just props to support a television movie that was portrayed as real? Pretty difficult to fight that real versus fictitious.
Well, yeah, and what I would say, too, is that, you know, it's been many years now, and I still have yet to meet anyone who has a first-degree relationship to anyone who died there. I know people who claim to know people who died, but it seems like with that many people, and I live in a major city, and I've lived in a major city for 25 years, you know, why don't I know anyone who's a first-degree survivor, if it happens?
Participant.
Yeah.
Say you met a first-degree participant in Hurricane Katrina, is that what you said?
Yes, I did. And in fact, you know, when that happened, well, actually, I even had a client who had survived Hurricane Katrina, and it was a kid, and he was very traumatized. I didn't get a lot of information from him that I can really check out, but from what he described, it sounded like it really happened, and it was very bad. The adult client that I had, who was the first responder, had absolutely horrific, really, really clear sensory kinds of trauma associated with it. So I think Hurricane Katrina was what was the horrific thing that we saw. But, you know, a lot of these other things, I don't think they were what they have been portrayed to be.
What kind of treatment do you offer?
I am a trauma therapist. I'm a trauma therapist. I treat PTSD.
Oh, wow. But what field is that in? Is that sociology or psychology or?
I'm a licensed therapist.
Trauma therapist. I've never heard of one before.
Well, I'm a normal mental health therapist, but my specialty for the last 12 years has been trauma. I also work with couples.
Marriage therapy?
Yes.
Fantastic. I think I could use a little bit of both. Little hoax recovery therapy. Two for one specials?
All of these things are traumatic, you know? It really is. I mean, just living constantly with the incongruencies of what we believe is really true and this soup that we live in is, I think, a huge, huge, huge stressor.
Might be just the person that we needed to stumble upon this forum, a trauma therapist, mental health specialist. That's fantastic.
Well, I wrote a little bit about this on one of the posts because, you know, here's the thing. I think the whole reason psychology is even a thing is because they needed to understand how the human mind worked so that they could, you know, influence everybody. And a lot of really good work by early researchers, I think, has been really misused to propagandize us and to instill fear and to make us, you know, not resilient and all of that stuff. It's really paralyzed us. It's stunted our thinking and our ability to problem solve. So I think it's huge, huge, huge. It's had a huge detrimental effect.
I heard that the word cure is not in the DSM.
It's illegal to use the word cure.
DSM? Or in your field at all?
Yeah, because the DSM is just the big list of all the different illnesses, you know, diagnoses, that kind of thing. But yeah, it is illegal to use cure. You cannot say that you cure anything. And that's because medicine doesn't cure. Medicine treats symptoms. And because medicine can't cure, nobody can use that word, even if what you in fact do does cure people.
That's medicine in general. It's not just mental medicine.
But
therapy.
I would say that I use two different therapies that do that. I can't say that they do that, but they very obviously do that because people no longer have phobias. They no longer have PTSD symptoms. I mean, all of the things that the DSM-4 say that you need to have in order to meet the diagnostic criterion, they don't have them anymore. So they don't meet the diagnosis. So the therapy that, you know, we do when we do trauma work does actually cure, but you can't say that.
Wow. So I originally, I got to stop using this, the 9/11 hoax recovery. I was just trying vocal radio therapy to. Am I breaking off? Thank you. Sorry, I just have to bear with me if I'm breaking off in a bad cell, I guess. No?
You're better
one,
now.
Two?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so I originally called my show the Hoax Recovery Show, where I wanted to reach out to different people around, ask them for assistance in recovering from this 9/11 psychological trauma. So, boy, it would have been fun to have you in on the broadcast at the beginning, Jeremy. If I'm breaking
up. You should read about a rarely used diagnosis and something that's very rarely seen called folie à deux. Have you heard of that? F-O-L-I-E.
No.
Yeah, it's funny because what it basically means is that it's two people who share the same fantasy.
Folie is French for fantasy and deux is too?
Something like that, yeah. But it's two people who share the same delusion.
Okay. Expound upon that? Expound and expand?
Well, what's funny to me about that is that, you know, when you're one of three people in a country who knows about fakeology, you know, you're still living in these two different worlds because nobody else agrees that you're right. You know you're right, but nobody else agrees with that. So, you know, you're still kind of living in this weird limbo.
Well, you're a bit of a mind or a mental expert, you say. Do it your word for now. How do you treat people knowing what you know, fakeology? Because you are, like you said, limbo. You are in another dimension in the sense that you're so on the fringe of thinking that influence in a negative way your therapy or probably taught.
Yeah, it's really hard. And, you know, the thing that comes up most is that depression and anxiety are absolutely, bar none, the most common things that you ever see. I mean, you know, 95% of the people have depression or anxiety. And the drug companies will tell you that they've got that because it is an imbalance of their brain chemicals. And it's not that. And when you realize that most of the depression and anxiety that people have is because of the crazy world we live in, I can't change the world, you know, and I
crazy
oftentimes
world that we're told we live in, right?
Right. But you're in this weird position of not being able to, you know, tell people this stuff because
I opt to cut down. We're echoing through you if you don't mind.
Oh, really? Sorry about that. Sorry.
Sorry. Right. Talking all that.
So,
okay,
you
go
know,
ahead,
for
Master.
Most people who are depressed or anxious, you know, it would be helpful for them to know that it's the crazy world we live in. But nobody else is telling them that. Everybody else is saying your brain chemistry is off, you need to be on medication. You know, they make the person the problem. You aren't doing something right, that's why you are depressed or anxious. When in fact, it is their body's true knowing telling them this is off, this is wrong, you know?
Wow. Wow, if you could only describe fakeologists to your patients.
Yeah, but, you know, they have your hands totally tied. I mean, I do my very best to be honest and really make people better, you know. But laws are selectively applied, and if they find out that you are, you know, not doing the program, they will find a way to make it look like you are doing malpractice.
No. Prescribe drugs?
No, I can't.
Can
in
you?
The master's level.
What would you do if you would have to refer them to someone that could prescribe drugs? Because one might think that the majority of people come to the medical profession looking for a pill script, as it were.
Well, yeah, and you know what's interesting is that a lot of the medication they put people who have PTSD on bums them out. Well, the therapy I do doesn't work if they're not in touch with their feelings. So if you're totally numbed out on medication and you're sent to me for trauma work, we're not going to make any progress.
Of course. Band-aid off if you want to treat the wound.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really frustrating because trauma is, you know, very easy to overcome, actually, especially with some of the really good trauma therapies that exist. But medication totally gets in the way and prevents it from happening.
Very, very interesting. Boy, you may be the most interesting forum member we have.
Oh, I don't think so.
I think you should do a session for anyone who's willing to come. Maybe have a weekly hour where you can just do a trauma therapy on 9/11 and PSYOP recovery. Because we're all just pounded with this stuff daily, as you said, and it is physically debilitating.
Well, a lot of what's really helpful with anything mental health is to understand, you know, that what's manifesting is a normal reaction to an abnormal circumstance. And the whole understanding of what trauma is and why it is now such a big deal in our culture today, where it didn't used to be actually, this is a new phenomenon, is really helpful for people to understand. Because if you understand what makes it possible to be traumatized, it's a lot easier to not be traumatized.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Well, that's why I think that work that the people at Fakeologists do and all the participants, it's so valuable because through fakery and know what the purpose is and know the end game thing behind it, we're so much better off health wise where we can ignore, we can filter, or we can just shut off propaganda and be happy knowing that we don't know just about anything because our main source of information is completely corrupt and full of propaganda and exaggerated and to our own world a few from our noses and with that first and then live comfortably in that small sphere of influence perhaps.
Well, yeah, and it's been kind of cool over the last few years to having, you know, known this kind of information to be able to so quickly see through things, you know, like legislation or something will be proposed. And it's so easy to be able to just extrapolate out and go, oh, this is what it's really about. They're calling it this. They're saying it's for this, but actually this is what they're trying to accomplish.
Right. But has anyone come to you, for instance, and said, oh, I'm so afraid of Muslims. I'm so afraid of terrorists. I'm so afraid of nuclear bombs. These are my main concerns, or financial collapse, or of the migrants.
Well, what I have noticed is that people are, in general, scared of all the wrong things.
Border, immigration issues.
Yeah. Yeah, they seem to actually be scared of all the wrong things. So if the news is touting something, that's what they're afraid of. But they're not afraid of the actual things that could cause them problems, like side effects of commonly prescribed drugs, you know. The fact that acne medication can cause IBS. They're not afraid of that, you know.
They're not afraid of side effects of both.
Well, you know, because of how media works, the media is always pounding the drum of what they want you to be afraid of. So the more tuned in people are to watching the news daily and whatever the, you know, frenzied thing of the moment is, that's what people tend to be worried about. But they don't tend to be very concerned about the things that are actually things that could be detrimental that they could outmaneuver.
Do you ever prescribe off the television?
Yes, I would say I do, because a lot of what we talk about is what improves your quality of life, what, you know, doesn't improve your quality of life, you know, that you have to be in charge of what it is that you're exposed to, what you put in your head, the frame of mind that you have, who you spend time with.
Very, very interesting.
But people are discouraged from doing any of their own research on anything. My mother-in-law went to the doctor. She has some kind of rare something that they've been trying to get diagnosed for 10 years. She's not one to do a lot of research about health stuff. And so she did, which surprised me. But when she told her doctor she did, her doctor said, please don't do that.
Yeah, meddling. You're meddling in your own health. I know what's best.
Yeah, just take this medication, even though it has 500 side effects.
That's something. Don't use your own brain. Turn it off. Come to me. I will solve everything.
You'll find yourself.
And I say the opposite. You know, people come to me and they want to treat me as the expert. They want me to just open up their head and dump stuff in. And I tell them, look, this is my job. I am not God. I am not the expert. We're going to work on this together. This is collaborative.
You sound like the best therapist ever. Is this method of therapy bought, or in the sense that, your therapy is drugless. It has to be by the degree of your certification, right?
It is drugless.
Drug-free.
There are several trauma therapies. The two that I use that are very, very effective that I really love, you can look up and learn more about. They're fantastic. One is called EMDR. It stands for Eye Movement Desensitization and Reprocessing. It's a physiological therapy, but it resolves emotional stuff. And the other one is called Lifespan Integration, and that one's also fantastic.
What's the last one? Light what?
Lifespan Integration.
What's
the creator's name is Peggy Pace. It's just lifespanintegration.com.
Just give us a quickie information packet on what that is.
I can. I hope people aren't bored with it, but do you want to know both of them or just the second one?
I'll hear both. Just a quick encapsulation. Further spur sure. interest from the listenership.
Okay, so they actually have a pretty similar mechanism of action. So how they work behind the scenes in the brain is actually pretty similar. EMDR has been around since the 80s. They first started using it on Vietnam vets, and now it's been used on all kinds of people for all kinds of things all over the world. I think it is still considered the number one treatment for PTSD. And the way that it works is that your eyes are actually an extension of your brain. And so when your eyes move sideways back and forth, it actually helps your brain move things from the left and right hemisphere and process trauma out. So what's trauma is actually not the story in your head, not the memory you remember, but the feelings that come up in your body when you remember that memory. So it's how it manifests in your physical body, like your heart beating and stuff like that. And so what this therapy does is it gives you a chance to relive it one last time, but in a safe place where you can process out the emotion part of it. So you still remember the event, but it doesn't have the same emotional impact on you. And that one uses, that one uses bilateral stimulation. So you move people's eyes back and forth, or you can like tap their knees alternately. Anything that draws the brain's attention from one side of the body to the other side. And that is a whole interesting way how this woman, her name was something Shapiro, figured it out. The other one is an outgrowth of EMDR. The person who developed it was an EMDR practitioner for many, many years and then came up with her own way of doing trauma therapy. And that uses a memory cue list. And what that does is because your brain can't tell the difference between something happening now and something you're remembering, you can use memories, one for every year of your life, to convince your body that you're not stuck back there at that traumatic event anymore. And so it neutralizes old traumas out that way.
All right. Very good. Just give me one sec here.
You okay, Master?
I'm here. I thought everyone was gone.
Sorry, Master. I'm just tied up for a minute. Let's maybe Psyopticon has a few questions.
Well, yeah, I'm interested in, you know, what's going on. Well, look, this is your background then, is it? It's trauma therapy. It's an interesting, pretty unique world to be in, I would have thought, isn't it? But what do you deal with, like, what can I call it, like tragedies from violence and road accidents and that sort of thing? And presumably ex-military personnel coming back from having been in conflict overseas, that sort of stuff?
Yeah, you know, I actually for several years did a lot of work for the military. About 75% of my caseload were referrals from the military. And what's interesting is none of them were war trauma. They were all other traumas.
Trauma from actually, you know, being in such a confined social life, you know, existence of, from the military, what can I call it, indoctrination and everything else.
Yes, a lot of it was like rape during you know, the initial training, boot camp, that's it. And, pretty much boot camp kind of trauma, rape while serving wherever, you know, whatever branch they were in. And a lot of, you know, kind of abuse of authority and injuries that were not really dealt with, like just the trauma of having to get the treatment that you needed for different injuries that you'd sustained.
It affects people very differently. I had a relative who was in the military and came back out and pretty much turned his back on everything to do with it. He'd turn the TV off if there was any sort of military coverage of any description. He just done the entire life of, you know, I wouldn't say it was very long in his life, but maybe 3 or 4 years. And I guess in a sense that was a kind of trauma reaction. It was just a shutting off of one's life to everything that had gone on in his early youth, as it were, you know, sort of his late teens and onwards, and just turned his back on it all, and he sort of rejected that part of his life as if it had never happened. But yeah, it sounds interesting work. I don't know anybody who does that sort of thing. I get, you know, as Ab said, it's kind of, he'd never, I think, did he say he'd never heard of anyone doing trauma therapy? But obviously in, you know, a critical part of, you know, the mental health sphere, as it were. So particularly with all this, you know, so many people suffering a sort of PTSD, do they call it? Is that what you called it?
Yep, PTSD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's also, I suppose, victims of crime, of violent crime and that sort of thing. It must be fairly common as well.
Well, there's that, but there's a lot of, you know, traumas that are, you know, a lot of things about death, a lot of things about dog bites. A lot of it about
phobias
medical stuff.
As well, then, really.
Phobias, yep. But, yeah. You know, a lot of times it was getting an injury or getting some kind of disease that they were going to have to live with. You know, trauma comes in lots and lots of different forms.
Well, it didn't necessarily be actually a practical experience. It might be just a fear of something that could happen rather than has happened, as it were.
Yeah, you can use these therapies on phobias, but phobias are not considered to be PTSD.
No, sounds interesting work anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, and very satisfying too, you know, because people do make very big progress, and in a lot of mental health, you don't see that. But with trauma, you really can.
Uh-huh. Good stuff. Good for you.
So I have a few more minutes, and then I should hang up and do some other stuff. But it was pretty fun to talk with just two people, which is nice. I think six would be overwhelming.
Yeah, I was really busy yesterday. It was great chatting with you. I don't know where Ab's gone, but he's a busy man on the road.
I'm here. I'm back.
I probably just have a few more minutes, but I'm glad I got to talk to you guys.
Like, coming through okay? Oh, no, you've been fantastic. You're a great resource, Master of None. This is fantastic. A very lovely voice, I might add, as well.
Thank you. I'll be back.
I think you might be the smartest person we've ever had on the forum, professional-wise. Some of us are just a bunch of hacks. Although Kay, of course, is a teacher by profession, but...
I don't know. I think there's all kinds of smart on here.
Don't attract professionals, I don't think. In that sense, I think maybe they're just afraid. Maybe they're above it all. I don't know.
Well, I also think that they're in that minion class, you know, where if you're not feeling the pain, you have no reason to upset the apple cart.
We could be easily dismissed as delusional. Is that a mental illness? Delusion.
Yeah, perhaps.
You treat delusion.
I'm asking
quite seriously.
No, and I would, yeah, and I take it seriously because I think there's a lot of people out there who have been diagnosed as delusional, and they're not. It's just the people that around them do not understand the world.
Oh, I know. It's. You think some people are afraid to discuss fakeology for fear of being labeled delusional?
I absolutely do. No, I really do. Because in this country, and probably in other countries as well, you know, if your family thinks you're crazy and you're a danger to yourself, and the proof that they use is you think that there are, you know, you think the government's listening to your calls and that the vaccine might have mercury in it and everything else, that becomes the things that they cite that you're crazy and need to be hospitalized.
I know. I think that's a big part of keeping people quiet. I really do. I think it's a very serious issue.
Yep, I agree.
Okay, well, at least I got a professional to agree with me this time. But is there... I'm trying to think what real delusionment looks like. Do you ever treat what you think is real delusionment? Because, of course, as a fakeologist, you know what's real and what's not real more than most people, I would think.
Well, you know, very early on in my career, I worked with severely, severely mentally ill, so a lot of schizophrenia. And it wasn't for a huge period of time. It was just part of the training rotation. But when I think back about those people now, it makes me really wonder about what schizophrenia is. And I wonder if, yes, of course, yeah, there's going to be ill brains that aren't functioning properly. But I also wonder if a number of schizophrenics, a percentage, I don't know what, is people who just have decided that this is how I'm going to check out. You know, I can't do life like this is, and I'm just going to instead, you know, pull within myself and look crazy to get people off my back and unplug from the system that I just can't deal with.
Schizophrenia treated with drugs, narcotics, strong ones?
All kinds of drugs like, you know, anti-seizure medication and stuff like that. They're just on all kinds of heavy meds so that they're just kind of compliant in a lot of cases.
Oh my goodness. That's fantastically sinister.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, even recently, when I consult with other therapists, you know, they'll run a case by me because we just consult with each other. And, you know, we have all at some time about different people we've consulted on said, you know what, they could be totally right. Yes, it sounds crazy, and they could still be totally right.
Isn't that something? Do you have any fakeologist type other therapists?
I actually do have one. She's an art therapist, and we like to talk about similar kinds of things a lot. But other than that, pretty much nobody, regardless of work they do I know who is interested in this in my real life.
I think it was you, Master, that gave me a slapping about my immigration views.
Yes.
Was that you?
That was me.
You were just remind me of how you slapped me. What exactly did you take issue with? Remember?
If I remember correctly, you were saying, well, why not let immigrants in since we don't have enough people to do the jobs? And in this country, the argument is always we don't have enough people paying into the system to support Social Security. And what I would say, at least in this country, is that half of Generation X, which is the generation I'm right in the middle of, what I'm part of, is, you know, half of that generation was aborted because abortion became legal. And so part of the reason that we don't have younger people who can pay into the system is that they're not here. They weren't born. And
wow.
So what the government has said is, let's just bring in all these immigrants because they're having all kinds of kids. But, you know, if you're an American and you're paying into the system and you're paying taxes and you have to pay for your kids' college because, you know, we have a lot of programs for people who are first in their family to go to college that are often immigrants that are paid for. You know, you as an American, you're just paying, and you're not getting a lot of benefit from the system. So you can't support as many kids, so you're not having as many kids. And I feel like it's a problem the government has created to justify bringing in people who have a very different cultural way of being in the world. And that artificially changes how our culture works.
Yeah, I guess that would be mainly Mexicans that come up to America, come up the West Coast, as it were.
No, it's actually not. It's we do have a lot of Mexicans, but we actually have a lot of African Muslims, a lot of different kinds of Asians, depending on where you are, a lot of Russians. You know, we have lots and lots and lots of very big immigrant groups.
All right. Well, no, your points are valid. Points are valid.
I think it's such a multifaceted issue. And
I think
that every single person on the planet is being adversely affected by it. And not only that, I don't even think they realize how they're being adversely affected.
I just find that it seems like we bump into a lot of white journalists that seem to be very concerned about the coloring of society. And I live in the most multicultural country in the world, probably, or we say we are. I don't know. Not true. But I find that once one generation has passed, some people are of different colors. They all pretty much think the way that society tells them to think. They usually shed all their originating cultures to adopt this North American consumer culture. I don't think they're
this
a threat.
This is such a much longer conversation. Like, I hesitate to even say anything because I feel like it takes a lot of preamble kind of to explain where it
That's
comes
fine.
From.
Fine.
But
sure.
But I do think it's a very, very important issue that everyone is negatively affected by. And I do think that the ramifications as time goes on will be really, really not good for any of us.
All right. Well, one day maybe we should discuss it. It's not fakeologist related, really. But if you believe culture creation, I often talk about culture creation and like to entertain culture creation conversations because, like, culture is created with a lot of fakery.
And this is that kind of topic for sure.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine. Well, we can discuss it later. But just before we let you go, what's your thoughts on some of the other major media events that I think are psychological operations, like JFK, Oklahoma? The moon, do you have opinions on those that you would care to share?
Well, I think the whole moon thing is totally fascinating, and I do think that it's a total scam. What's funny is that when I was in high school, I was actually a tour guide for a space museum, and as a very little kid, I wanted to be an astronaut. One year for Halloween, I dressed as an astronaut. It was very exciting and interesting to me. And then when I worked at the space museum and gave tours, I think back on the ridiculous stuff that they had us tell people, and I just laugh. Because, you know, we told people how they went to the bathroom in space, and we gave them astronaut food, and we had a lunar module in our museum that totally looked like you could pick it up with one hand, and it was supposed to be real. We did a space camp for all the smart kids who wanted to someday be an astronaut. And we had a moon rock that was, you know, secured underneath the building at night. It was crazy. I just think, wow, I wish I'd been alive when all that happened, because it just is crazy to me. So, yeah, I think that that's probably maybe not real.
Yeah, and of course, dovetails into the latest phrase that's hitting the alternative circuit, which would be of the place that we live on. Do you have an opinion on ball or flat or curved or concave or convex? Do you have any interest in this discussion?
Well, you know, it's another thing that I've always had some questions about. And when people brought it up, I actually was not thinking that is preposterous. I was thinking, tell me more. And I still feel that way. I don't know that it's as simple as round or flat. It could be something in between or something even different from that. But I think it's totally fascinating. I'm very excited to see how the discussion continues and what we learn more and more about. And I just love that all of these academics who have been making a living off of tripe in so many different areas are all being challenged. I absolutely love it.
The Renaissance, the method of communication we have now, in a great time to see this technology while we're still able to use it in a constructive way, isn't it? We can tear down real walls of knowledge and rebuild them even.
Oh,
great time
really
to be around.
Yeah, I love the internet. I love that there are people of all ages who are on it. You know, that there's pictures, there's books, there's video, there's just all these great things that you can refer to and cross-reference, and it's amazing.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned cross-referencing, and that was one of my favorite things at the beginning of the internet. We had what are called hyperlinks. I don't call them really that anymore. Technical term for text that is underlined, and you can click on it, and it will take you to another URL or website. I thought that was the best thing ever, is when someone referred to something, you could just didn't know what it was or wanted further information, you could click on it and just get that information loading on your screen as quick as possible and satisfy your curiosity before you lose or lost that particular piece of curiosity. Yeah, I think that's it's so powerful.
Yeah, it is. I do love that.
Yeah. Hopefully more people can take advantage of it, because I think people are just zombifying in the way that they always do, and they're just pushed on them and they're not pulling it. Not pulling information on a regular basis, then you're really at of just turning your computer into another form of download device,
vision. Just like my moniker, you know, Jane of All Trades, Master of None, I have for 15 years tried to figure out, you know, what is the one thing that I could become an expert on? I would read every book, know every single thing about it, and I am just interested in everything, so I'm probably never going to be that person. But I do love knowing a lot about a lot of different things. And I think a lot of other people are in that same boat. It's hard to pick just one thing and just, you know, learn every single thing. And we just can't help, especially with how the internet is laid out, go from thing to thing to thing to thing.
Well, I agree with your name, moniker. And I've often described myself as someone who knows a little bit about a lot. I don't know a lot about a little. I know a little bit about a lot. I just chose an interest that I thought was relatable to almost everyone, and that would be 9/11. And, of course, it's going to fade away as time goes by, but I still think as long as remote psychological operations for generations like JFK and 9/11 now, that it'll always be topical, especially as long as they continue to put money into the PSYOP. I thought it's a great jumping-off point for all the little PSYOPs. So I've decided that, in a way, my PhD 9/11 psychoanalysis or psyopery or whatever you want to call it. So I think it's exciting that we've attracted someone who's in the mental health field, because the mental health theme also comes up all the time in psyops. It's widely abused and
Yeah, it really is. You know, the thing about 9/11 is not only is it topical, it's transferable. All the different things you learn about how they pulled that off, you know, are transferable to understanding all the other stuff that they pull off. It's a great case study.
And, yeah.
Well, my dogs are going crazy, so I need to go. I need to go run them. Nice talking to you, and you too, so I have to come.
All right.
Yeah,
all right, come back anytime.
Hope to chat another time soon.
Drop in. Drop
Thanks,
in anytime.
Guys. I will. Bye.
Bye. Oh, there goes Master of None from the audio chat. Oh, that's always my greatest excitement is to hear a new voice, male voice, of course. So rare in these circles. And what a lovely voice Master of None had, Psyopticon.
Very much so, yeah. It was an interesting chat indeed, it was, yeah. As you say, I always like the drawing out from the, you know, new people, you know, what their background is and what the, you know, how they caught on to fakeology and discovered that the world of media fakery is endemic and, you know, not just the occasional dodgy photo or whatever, it's actually the whole of our society is founded on fakery, you know, propagated by the media, and it was interesting to hear this woman's background and how she came into it and such like. So yeah, very interesting. Did I just hear you say that it's very rare to have females, women are in this world, you know? Did you say that?
No, I think that's a true statement.
Yeah.
If they are more females, they're if they are, they're lurkers. They're not as participating. And of course, that one of the millions of other questions I asked her, could she have stayed a little longer? So if someone gets her on again, feel free to ask if you'd like to speculate on why females aren't vocal in this area.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it just doesn't interest or something. I don't know. I do tend to think there's a famous quote, isn't there, in 1984 about how Julia was sort of more susceptible to the propaganda than Winston, and maybe that was actually based on fact in Orwell's time. He may have known that may have been an observation that he actually put on the paper with his pen, and may have been the case even back then that women somehow, by you know, making an awful stereotype here. And
I think it's valid. I think it's valid because the highlight emphasis on all psyops is emotion.
Mm-hmm.
They try and mask out the logic. They actually overlook the logic. They skimp on the logic, as it were, if you will. They don't provide many details of the logic or of the event. They simply highlight and dwell upon the emotion of the story. And women are attracted to emotional stories like a moth to light, very much so. And they'll glom on to the emotion, and they will take in the story, they will digest the story, and they will recirculate story, and that will be what attracts it. I don't know if you remember, well, of course, you listened to the Rob Ford interview, and you notice how I think he's been trained in storytelling to a degree that a Canadian would be trained, and that is he went right to the emotion of his story. For instance, if you listen to the logistics of the story, he went to the doctor with stomach pain, and the doctor immediately diagnosed him with a malignant tumor, and he went to the cancer hospital. Now, I think anyone with half a brain knows they do a biopsy on any part of your body, you forget a result right away. It takes a long time. So if any of his story was possibly true, where he would have been admitted to get a biopsy, because if it died underneath his skin, then there would be surgery to get to do the biopsy. And there's no way anyone would know anything for quite a period of time. And I don't know what the turnaround time is to do a biopsy and to do a confirmation on the tumor, but it can't be a matter of hours or minutes as he described it. But no, he did emphasize how he had a big cry on the way down to the cancer hospital. Notice he's highlighting the emotional part of the story, not going into any of the logistics. Somebody told me I had a malignant tumor, and in the emergency triage center of a hospital, I would tell them, better double check your work, boy. I'm not going to go tell the whole world and potentially hang myself and let them know I had just got a death sentence by some triage nurse or emergency room doctor. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
well, the logistics of his story, the logic doesn't hold in his story. And again, he went right to the emotional part to hook you in.
And he was distressing, or rather the interview. Well, there was one interviewer, wasn't there? Or there were two? There was a woman there as well, wasn't there? Or was there? In that interview there.
Anyway, well, there's the one main interviewer. His name is Humble Howard. I've had him on the broadcast because he has a 9/11 interest, a cursory interest, mind you. And he has two co-hosts that often chime in or chip in.
She sort of interjected about how Rob Ford was, how women tend to have a better rapport with their doctors and aren't afraid to actually say, you know, I think I might have something wrong, and, you know, very seriously wrong here. And Rob supposedly held back, didn't he? Ford supposedly held back. Whereas, and as that second interviewer said, something along the lines of women generally come forward. So they were sort of, as you say, sort of pitching men against women there, and Rob put himself forward, you know, for what can I say, for chastisement for not putting himself forward earlier for cancer treatment, if he had any at all.
I think it is a statement, though. I would tend to agree with as a matter of fact. No, it is. I think it is true. I don't think it was. I think it was a comment to create a division necessarily, because let's face it, men and women are different. So, In that case, I've heard that over and over again. As a matter of fact, that I knew that just died of cancer. His wife was very upset with him that when he had the original cancer diagnosis and removal of the small growths, follow up on it, because there was just no more symptoms. He was asymptomatic. Yeah. Of course, busy inside, the cancer did grow, and to the point where it was too late. And, so that is an example of how he basically did not do as he was.
I don't know. It was interesting about the, you know, returning to the sort of the male-female differences there, and when it comes to 9/11 research or hoaxery research. I was chatting with somebody many, many, many years ago. There still is a forum in Britain called Media Lens, as in camera lens, Media Lens. And they're very, very sort of, whatever the word is, very neutralized, sort of defanged sort of group who just quibble over whether somebody's tie is, you know, demonstrates bias in the media and such, like, you know, whether the color of their necktie is indicative of bias and that sort of crap. And
this
guy, I was kind of saying at the time, there's no women in these groups. And he said to me, women tend to have a sort of nurturing instinct, that they feel very protective and generally are sort of right of center when it comes to, you know, they generally go along with sort of orthodoxy and authority and such, you know, such like, because it's just a natural
rule
instinct.
Followers.
Pardon?
Rule Again, followers. They're rule followers.
Yeah, exactly. That's what he was saying. Yeah. Yeah, he was calling it sort of like a nest. What did he call it? Like a nesting syndrome. They're like, you know, they constantly want to build a, you know, a safety for themselves and their family. It's like a protective sort of trait of, you know, human trait, a psychological trait. And that was, he was explaining that why, you know, women generally haven't looked at 9/11 as being, you know, potentially a fraud, a hoax, or anything else. They've just got along with the orthodoxy of, you know, sort of safeguarding their own family first and following government advice of, you know, sort of watching out for dodgy Muslims walking around or whatever else. But yeah, it's kind of it's different. Yeah, there's one or two. I mean, you've got at least three female followers in fakeology.com. You've got Kay Hamed and Vidair and this lady, Master of None. So that's, I can't think of any more. None. Who else?
I went into
Babette,
a...
of course. Babette is fascinating. We chatted, she wouldn't go into the live room though, but the live stream. She's very interesting indeed, Babette, but she seemed a little bit prickly towards somebody or other. There's some sort of animosity there, but she's a fascinating woman with a huge amount of material behind her. But I think she uses two different identities. She's got like Babette that she uses on the forum, and she was somebody else on the in the lobby, unless I've got confused altogether. So there's one or
You're
two
right.
more, aren't there? Oh, of course, there's Mojo. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh.
Likes her drink and a little disruptive on the last chat.
Yeah, I think she likes, you know, stereotyping the Scottish here. I think she likes her liquor a little bit, but yeah. But anyway, whatever. Yeah, she's entertaining anyway. But yeah, but it's greatly dwarfed, isn't it? The number of women are
a lot of people
dwarfed,
need their liquor to open up.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah. Well, I think we all like a bit of a drink, but I know from my own experience, it can easily get out of hand, and one beer ends up as 10 or something. Yeah.
Then we hear the real Psyopticon, right?
I don't know about that. No, No, but the number of women is very dwarfed, isn't it, really? It's like by the number of men who are in the same field. I wonder if that actually works in the PSYOP teams, as it were, the people who are actually cooking up these hoaxes and frauds and everything else, since they're basically, most of them are based on emotions rather than logic, as you just said. I wonder whether actually women are better at writing them in a sense, or whether it's left to men to manipulate women's minds. It's interesting how the PSYOP teams are actually composed in terms of men versus women in concentrations.
Well, let's talk about just authors in general. If there are more male authors that write about
Romance and that sort of thing. Women tend to be the pulp fiction, aren't they, sort of thing, romance and what do they call these, Mills and Boone sort of stories, aren't they, whereas men tend to have sort of realist, much more likely to be, historical, novels with a sense of reality to them and based on real events and such like, and women on the other hand following the romance of life and such like in terms of authorship in novels and fiction.
So I'm just wondering who writes the majority of the emotionally charged books. Is it females or males?
Oh, well, I guess it's women. That said, I suppose the horrors are generally men, written by men, aren't they, really? The horror stories and whatever.
Don't know.
I've never made any study of it. It'd be interesting to actually know, or I don't know how you'd actually find out what the composition's like in terms of men versus women in the PSYOP writing teams, whether they're actually based on sort of a teamwork or whether it's individuals writing their own narratives in each case or what. But, okay, Hamad, talking of women.
Oh, Kay's coming by. Fantastic.
Sure.
Sure she has some insight into this whole thing. Always does. Has some good insight, I think. Okay.
Hey, Ab. How you doing?
Fantastic. I think we may have met your replacement.
Oh, yeah? That's good. Can you hear me okay?
We can never replace you.
Oh, are you talking about Mojo?
No, you just missed Master of None.
Oh, who's that?
Not been listening to the live stream?
You're breaking up, Ab.
Oh, I'm breaking up?
Mojo's accent.
I'm breaking up? 2212?
Well, maybe it's me.
2212?
You're just going light and dark.
That 2212?
That's looking better now.
Sometimes my Bluetooth gets knocked off, as I've discussed. Very good. Yeah, you just missed Master of None.
Well, that's too bad. What'd you guys talk about?
From Seattle. You have a new potential psychologist date in your future.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he's from the Emerald City, is he? We'll have to see about that.
Mail. Mail unit coming through. Hello?
You're breaking up.
Breaking me up, I think.
I don't know. My
might be your end. Psyop Pickle, can you speak to this? Is it my end or is it her end?
Oh, hi guys. Yeah, it's you're fine, Ab, or I can hear you okay. I guess it's works for both of us. Okay, Hamid.
All right. I'll take the blame only when I deserve it.
No, I agree. Don't take it. Just, I know my machine does weird things sometimes. So, my levels, I gotta check my levels.
Could be more, maybe your internet connection is flaky. You on a wireless session?
Yeah, I'm always wireless, Ab. I fly.
Okay.
Doesn't everyone?
No.
Isn't everyone wireless?
No, at home, I'm fully wired.
Am I? Keep away from wireless. Jeez.
I hired an electrician to run the cable up and down the corridor.
Yeah, I should do that. That sounds like a great idea.
Not expensive. Charge by the hour. You go buy the cable yourself. At 45 cable.
Yeah.
Anyway, can you hear me now? Because I wanted to describe
you. I guess
we
could do that.
We met Master of None tonight.
Yes, I can hear you. I believe I can.
Master of None. Our name is Jane the Researcher.
And where's
the Jane Doe? She's from Seattle. And she's a mental therapist.
Neat.
And boy, she's got quite the radio voice, dare say.
Oh, good. I love... Can never have too many of anybody, females.
Males especially.
Especially in this field.
Oh, no, that's what we were saying. Psy
Opticon
and I were just
awesome.
Speculating. Oh, she was great.
I'm so excited.
She writes spends a lot of effort in writing posts as well on the website. Spends way more effort than I would even dream of. I mean, you know, I'm just sort of a drive-by commenter. Yeah, she puts a ton of. She made a huge post. She made a huge post, eh? I just said all I could say was just well done, really well done, smart email unit.
Excellent. That's good.
Deals with mental therapy and asked her if the mental therapy maybe she thinks is deeply rooted into contradictions of this world where people know something's wrong but nobody will admit to it or confirm it. Causes great anguish among people, and it really affects their mental health. So I asked
that
if
makes
she
so much sense. You know, it makes so much sense.
Asked if she could prescribe fakeologists instead of whatever other treatments that she might offer.
Yes, yeah, side effect is paranoia after this treatment.
Well, I asked if she thought we were delusional. Does she treat delusion? You know, because the first thing we would be accused of would be delusion, delusional. And that's got to be one really big old fakeologist from sharing their information, I think.
So what did she say? Would she consider being honest with her patients, or is that not good?
Well, I think she's restricted by her practice, and don't think she really prescribes course of fakeology. Other treatments that are tried and true that she uses, but
treatment? Fakeology?
No. Oh, yeah. Well, she sounds rather holistic. She can't prescribe drugs. She's not a doctor of psychology. No, she's a master. She's at the master's level of her education, which does not give her access to drugs.
Yeah.
She has to use other treatments. Or, I guess if it's not drugs, it's holistic. Definition, perhaps.
Right. I prescribe 1 month of fakeology.com. Fakeologist.com. Your holistic treatment.
Due to collaborating in some way.
And that's
in
what
the
a fakeologist does. Fakeologist. Yeah, that would be awesome. We crack this crap wide open. It's so funny. Yeah. You were just talking about the dichotomy in people's brain. I was just listening to the Hoy, the Clues Forum podcast with Hoy Polloi. That's kind of fun, huh? With 9/11.
Well, that's our favorite topic.
Welcoming an old friend back into your brain, 9/11. It is. The
thing that I found amusing.
It's outrageous. They set up this. Yes. Go ahead. All right.
We have a lag, I think. We have a lag. Satellite is on the dark side of the moon tonight. You want
to
just log in and log out? Sounds like there's a 2 second lag.
I'll be
back.
Yeah, it's probably me.
My Opticon, you and I didn't have a lag.
2212.
Nah, you're okay. It's fine for me.
2212.
All right. Okay.
Okay.
That solved it. Yeah, sometimes logging in and out is good.
Yeah. So the dichotomy
if people know how the internet works. Because we are on a spider web, that's what it's called, a web. Routing from my server to your address, log in and out, I would suppose, some way.
Perhaps. Yeah, I need a landline.
But that's
why it
might be. Once you establish a route, it might stick to that route. Mm-hmm. Well, that's all right. You're usually okay. I've been driving through some really bad cell areas, and I'm starting to write them down now. Some of them are almost completely down. Shadows in the city.
It's cool, isn't it? It's like these, like, exactly these shadows. There's some places I can go around here that you're just in a hole. There's no reception. There's no way you're going to get any. I always know, I got to go. It's coming up. Okay, bye.
Yeah. Dichotomy, you were saying? I've got about 20 minutes, by the way, before I have to crash. 20 minutes, just so you know.
Okay. But just like for 9/11, what you're saying, to put into people's brain. I mean, one eyewitness says it's not commercial. It's got a blue circular logo. Another one says it sound like it could only be a missile. Another one says where the plane, like they were going to say missile but didn't. Another said it's a jet plane or small Airbus 737. So, I mean, they did a small...
They're sowing confusion.
Right. Another one said it's a small propeller plane. Another one said it's definitely not commercial. And another one said it's a large commercial jet. So, I mean, this is the news. Of course, what does that do to your brain? I mean, how do people process that type of information from your trusted source?
The worst part about it for me with 9/11 is they never any what appeared to be ill or officially sanctioned investigation. That was my final frustration that just told the official story. The official investigation was completely unsatisfactory, and it was left hanging. And it appeared like it was going to be left hanging forever, where I was ultimately stalled for years.
Yeah, that's a big thing that made it feel fake, that the government wouldn't address it like aliens or something. You know, they wouldn't resolve the issue. So I'm like, this can't be real. You're not resolving it.
Yeah, well, I just thought, how can this be treated so lightly and so casually, and can we leave all these questions and all these bling ideas? Can we leave them hanging forever? This is crazy. You almost think that, are you in another universe where only you see this problem? Why isn't it being really, if all these people really died, why are we so careless with the answers? It was another massive mind bender. Just an ear. Irreconcilable set of circumstances.
Oh, yeah. And they talk about it incessantly, but yet do nothing about it.
So frustrating. And now we know the reason why, of course.
Well, you're right.
I have my answer.
Right. Now my brain can relax. It can go, oh, I get it. It's not meant to be solved. It's meant to be an ongoing
hoax.
Yeah.
And nobody died, so why would you care? Why would there be an investigation? One big hoax. That makes sense. I'm okay with that now. We don't need an investigation into an event where nobody dies.
Right. And, you know, I think a mental health care professional might say we are rationalizing because we don't want to admit to the terror or something. I've heard this said. It's like, well, it's convenient for you to think like that no one died. And I said, you know, thank God it is, because it's what most of the information points to. It's what is most logical given all the facts and all the data. It's probably like, 90% sure it's probably what happened, how I'm thinking now with all the data points that way for me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, of course. Well, we've been thinking this way for a number of years, so nothing has moved me on or moved me along, so I'm pretty satisfied, I'm right.
Yeah. And, you know, it's nice now because when we get new information, we got a pocket to put it in. We have a nice 9/11 hoax schema there. And it continues to make sense. We're not continually confused by new information anymore. We know what to do with it there, brain people. We got a hoax schema in our brain.
Yeah, you can talk about that with Master of None. She'll be great. I'm already looking forward to your encounter with her.
Oh, yeah, that'll be fun. I've been interested in psychology for, a lot of sciences. I'm kind of like a science buff. That's kind of what I did, you know, just like pick an area and just completely go after it till you get the essence of it and the idea of it. And then, you know what, though? I found, Ab, that after you get so far to understand any, like, psychology or sociology or any of these ologies, then it starts... It's like you get up this mountain of understanding and then it goes back down because they ruin it with all their data and all their digging and all their fake science, and it just mucks up all the information. You don't understand it anymore, I noticed.
Okay.
So that's why I'm like, I gotta stop. What? The rest of this is nonsense. Like with the dinosaurs, you know, once you learn something, you're like, well, that's just nonsense. Now I gotta walk away from that.
Yeah, how could any dinosaur be considered scientific? Just it's a cartoon.
But you know, the funny thing is, you would not believe all the technical shit written about it. So much technical information, mountains of it, over these bones that they found that pretty much almost, I would say everyone except three people in the universe have access to. So all they're doing is writing papers off of pictures is really, or casts. They're never touching the real dinosaur bone, most of these scientists. Mounds, they talk about all the, you know, the scientific, it's the metatarsal kind of language, and then they talk about actions. It's like, how could you possibly know how whatever animal this came from used this bone? There's no way you could know that. But anyway, that's the funny part of dinosaurs.
Never really been a dinosaur person at all. There's never been an interest of mine. They have big scary things on the museums, but never caught my interest, thankfully.
What's
grateful
one of those?
For that.
It doesn't make sense kind of things. I'm like, well, wait a minute. They're really huge. And look at our elephant. You know, it should look kind of like an elephant and be wide. You can't have skinny legs and be 30 feet tall. It doesn't make any sense.
Toronto just got rid of our elephants. We don't have elephants anymore. We sent them to California, and I think he died over there. So we're done. Zoo does not have an elephant now.
What are the kids going to ride there at the zoo, though? You got to have something.
Our zoo has very little now. I'm waiting for the day when they announce it's going to be subdivision. So, done.
Is it a city-owned zoo?
Yeah. It's not good.
Those are tough. You just like not, constant fundraising. Ugh. Unless you have good donors or what do you call patrons, you can't exist hardly as a nonprofit.
No, I don't think so. Yeah, it's just not a good. It's never been. It's lost all it. And
I know what its problem is. No app. It needs to push evolution.
Dinosaurs?
Then it's dinosaurs and evolution. Then it's going to get a ton of funding. They just need to say, hey, the kids here need to learn about evolution, and they'll get grant after grant after grant.
Yeah, it's too cold here half the year as well. Not a good thing for a lot of the exotic animals. They don't survive up in this weather. Build a huge warehouse for them.
Well, aren't most zoos like heated and really, really nice now, mostly, for the animals?
I don't know. Well, they have lots of buildings that I guess get heated up, but I'm talking about for some of the guys, like an elephant, heating football field to run around, I would think.
Right.
Got rid of the elephant.
It's kind of expensive, heating up that. Just put a jacket on him, a heated jacket. Why heat the whole space? Just heat the elephant. Maybe a big elephant fleece, a zip-up, sleeveless. Be perfect.
Wear a yak. Maybe have his neighbor, the yak, come over and jacket on. Should I progress from the great topic of fecology? Is there anything you want to bring up that's caught your eye?
Oh, I'm embarrassed how much I don't know about what's going on in the media. I gotta get on in there and figure out, because it's like I look sound stupid now in front of my peers. I gotta get on in there, learn something.
Ecologist topics that you've bombed onto in the last week.
Busy. What was I doing? Ecologist. Just getting back in the 9/11 thing. That's kind of cool. Kind of a nice brain break.
Oh yeah, I got the 9/11 stuff up now. Wow, I got some old stuff, some new stuff. It's 9/11 a week. Fluffing off some of that ballers. I think you don't like.
Well, you know, it's like a template, though. You know, once you look at it, like the fact that the news media purposely scripted, and you know, I mean, I don't think people realize those news reports were also made in advance. Not just the footage of 9/11, the entire show. Every time a newscaster said whatever, that was made in advance. All of it. I'm sure of it.
Brought new ones onto the scene. Sell it. Aaron Brown and Paula Zahn. First day on CNN, the CIA news network.
Right. It's almost as if he was disposable, you know. Like,
he did get disposed. Yeah,
he did. Like the other guys were like, "No, I'm not going to do it. No, no."
They all did do it.
Well,
Matt Lyer and what's his name? I never liked him, Rather, who of course was in the JFK hoax at the front. Well, from Dallas himself, and Peter Jennings, the Canadian. Was the main anchor for
it's crazy, though. It's like once you look into this, you can only come to one conclusion. Like all the eyewitnesses, they're all from the news. All of them. They're all either a senior producer walking into work from Fox, or every one of those witnesses, I think, except like one maybe. Like we're talking, I think, up to 20 witnesses who say they saw the plane hit the tower. They were news employees or news USA Today employees. Is that crazy?
Hey, what'd you think of the 9/11 artwork that I found on a 9/11 Awaken blog with poetry and art?
Let's take a look.
That picture of the Freedom Tower with the halo is amazing. I might frame that thing. I might put that out at my local Costco. Offering a special on 8x10s. It is a very pretty picture. Colors and whatnot.
Yeah.
Great art on that blog. 11 art. I like it.
That is interesting. That's very occultic looking.
Oh, of course. The whole thing is an occult mess.
Okay, I have an idea. Let me tell you my theory and tell me what you think, right? So you know how people say the Jews did it or the Jesuits did it or the Masons, you know, they're the ones in charge, right? What if they
sovereign,
all...
Yeah, don't forget S-Mom, Sovereign Military Order of Malta.
Oh, those guys. What if they're all in charge? What if they all have their own lair to take care of? Because I thought about this with the Chris Kendall, right, when he was...
Oh, yeah.
When Chris was, he was watching those, whatchamacallits in the park get those kids' fingerprints for safety. What's the Masons, the local Masons getting that? The thing, parents, when's the last time a kid was kidnapped? It almost never, ever happens, yet you want your kid to be permanently databased?
Well, they're almost always kidnapped by the ex-parent or the non-custodial parent. Let's be honest.
Mm-hmm. So what if the Masons take care of the groundwork?
Right. Like they're the usually policemen. Kidnapped by their parent that doesn't get along with the other parent.
Yeah. And you know what? It's that kidnapping is not always a bad thing. I mean, sometimes a good parent does take it from a bad parent who's the courts wrongly gave custody. You know, it's not always. I'm not saying they should kidnap, but the courts aren't always right in a lot of cases. So, you know, God bless you, parents, if you take things into your own hands. So,
well, yeah, there's a lot of different levels. I think we're run by gang running us.
So it's like the Masons are the street level, and then the Jews are like the banker level. Everyone has, sure. And the entertainment level. Everyone has their level, and I think they're all in on it, but maybe they don't know what part they play, but... It's like a layer cake, don't you think? What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think the voluntary S-MOM, the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, is something they all join at the top. Leaders kissing the ring of the Pope, Black Pope.
Mm-hmm. That's weird stuff, huh? You're like, what went on to start this thing in the first place? Holy cow.
Pope and the Queen, they are... portrayed as ceremonial, but way more to it than that.
You would think, right?
That's why they want ceremony in my mind.
Yeah. Well, if it is, I don't think they'd want the power. I mean, they've certainly benefits to being there, I believe. That's why they're there.
Well, they still have a following. Anyone that has a big following in this world, very important. No. Pope is the vicar of Christ, he says. There are a lot of Christians. Roman Catholics.
Yeah. But the new Pope, isn't he like, you know, cool and kind of like a hippie?
Pardon.
My mom was
just
impressed
to her believers.
My mom really likes him a lot.
Everyone loves him.
He's so different from the last one, I thought. Not the last one.
The last one couldn't take a good picture, so they had to get rid of him.
Right.
Creepy looking. New guy is a very photogenic.
Interesting. Which one was it? He was like...
Vatican.
Didn't like the Palestinians or something. He thought... And then now I think it's like one wanted war against Arabs, and now this guy is like the peace guy. It's like they all seem to like play a role.
Oh, yeah. Good cop, bad cop. The old bad guy in with the new bad guy. All a duck. dialectic. It's all showbiz for a lot of, in a lot of ways.
Brian, I wish we knew how deep does that showbiz thing go? Like, how scripted? I always wonder that.
The end of the world didn't occur. The world is, I'm still on the planet, on this world. I don't want to call it a planet anymore.
This in case terra we're not wandering. Firma. We'll call it terra firma. Is that innocuous enough?
Well, Earth. Earth is good. Earth. Like Earth.
That's Earth. Good, too. Yeah. What was it about? Why were we supposed to die? Or the end of the world?
Don't
what
know. There's a lot of... Look. There's a lot of... A lot of things lining up right now. A lot of things lining up. And I don't want to keep bringing you back to a topic you're not interested in or you don't buy into, but we have a big thing happening on the 27th, which is Sunday, a lunar eclipse. And I was a little disturbed that total lunar eclipse, the last one was 33 years ago. Quite concerned. Oh. How do these numbers always line up? And they said be a live animation, exact time. Now, why do we need an animation? Why can't they just do a live telescope through feed of the actual moon clip?
Well, is someone
why do
doing
we need
it?
An animation? Why bother doing it at the exact time it's happening if it's happening? Well, I just got this email from timeanddate.com. They're the ones that tell me there's a live animation at the time of lunar. How about a reel? So maybe Jaronism and all these guys that are big on this sky watching can really do something real.
Where? Well, they're not going to solve anything. Where is? Do we know what country it's over?
North America. There'll be a very clear lunar eclipse.
Well, what's the entire state?
Wait, happy Super- Eid. I guess you had your Eid yesterday.
Well, thanks. Yeah, Eid Mubarak. That's what we say to each other. Eid Mubarak. Congratulations, Eid, kind of, I guess. Let's see. I want a picture, an image.
Psyopticon was questioning whether the gambling deaths were real in Mecca.
Yeah, you know, I questioned
that myself.
That
was a worthy
myself.
Question.
No, what? Why can't we?
Here, can't we get,
cause it, I was asking my husband about
every
it.
Year, hundreds get trampled?
Not really. I mean, mostly it's just broken ankles, and a lot of people, they go there to die. They're old people, and they're just hanging on, and then they finally get there, and they just release. They're just old. They just, that's why they came. It's interesting how they can time that. But because people are walking slow. Everyone's in sandals, and they're in these roby things that you have to tie, and they come loose. So you can't walk too fast, and everyone's tired and hungry and thirsty. You're walking slow. So in order for there to be a trampling, there has to have been something to startle someone to run for their life for something. Because everyone's moving slow. No one's running.
Maybe a hot dog cart comes by and everyone runs for it?
I don't know. It's
Food,
you know, I keep...
Water!
Yeah. And I, you know what I think it is? I think it's a strategy of tension against Muslims. I think each group has their own strategy of tension, and boy, this is one of them. So,
well, you had your clock bomber. That was a big one too this last week.
What that stupid crap? He listen. I don't. You know, one would say, well, maybe he did it, and they took advantage of it. That might be, but the timing is too perfect. So I'm going to say no. The whole thing's a hoax. Because it's damn perfect timing, if you know what I'm saying.
Of course it is. Of course. Of course. Well, you know what? The No Agenda Show, in their own way, they did a pretty good deconstruction of it. So I'm happy with knowing what they said.
And just know that Adam Curry's job is to hide the real media fakery. That's his job. He'll never go there, ever. He might hint at it. To get viewership,
you're right.
But he doesn't mean it, you know. So if you know that, you're fine. Yeah, of course you
hit
it.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, he hides it well. He's a real kid that really accidentally brought in, and it's.
And where do you get a metal briefcase? Those things are hard to find.
The AIR. AIR is somewhat co-opted. Leadership might be controlled opposition, co-opted.
Well, you know, I've been to several care functions
or
myself here in Seattle over the years, probably about 30.
Yeah.
It's a lot, isn't it? And mainly, I mean, from what I know, they're like a human rights organization. And so what, and they're very poor. They pay their employees very poorly. They barely survive. But they do a lot of, what do you call that, lobbying thing activities. But mostly what happens is they're like, they're a public, they give law support and moral support and advocacy support to people who are being discriminated against. And they'll take anybody. And that's what I know. I know story after story. Care stepping in and, you know, helping to advocate for people's rights. Like, you know, someone wants to do their five prayers at work and the boss says no. And so they find a little corner to do their five prayers and the boss says, you can't do that at work. And then so these guys go to care. And care comes and they say, you know, it is their religious freedom. And you said they do have a 5-minute prayer time. So is that okay? My community, that's what I know what care does.
Well, you're breaking up a bit, so I think it's a good time for me to say goodnight anyway.
But they could be co-opted at the top.
Yeah, or they could be being spoofed. Spoofed. You know what I mean by spoofed?
Ah, yes. They say they're there. There's a rep and there's no rep.
No rep. It's just the CIA or right. intelligence agencies or the military pretending to be care. And how can care... How can the real care speak up? They don't control the media. It doesn't matter.
Right. If they're real.
Yeah. So
yeah.
It could be not the real care, but they just get the blame and they can't get their voice heard, the real voice heard in the media. I don't know. Or maybe they're, it's just hard to say the exact mechanism of the deception. Something's happening and it's not.
Right.
Yeah. Like the Masons. The Masons are a good group for, in many ways, but. They're spoofed often, I'm sure of it. Organization.
You know what? That I never thought of that. Certain Masons could be spoofed. Why not?
God, well, the Masonic organization
really must be so twisted.
Well, yeah, the Masonic organization could be being spoofed. Yeah, for sure. But they're a secret organization, so they can't. Yeah, you know, they can't really speak up if they're a secret organization. That's the whole problem.
That's so funny. They're like, perfect. We got it. We'll spoof all these secret organizations.
But anyway, I got to call it a night. And I think Kosoff's in the lobby. Maybe he'll speak. I know Psyopticon is always good for a chat. I think he's waiting in the wings. So I'm going to have to, unfortunately, sign off. My 20 minutes are up.
All right. Well, it's been nice talking to you, Ab.
Nice as always. Up again next time.
All right. Take care.
Hi, I'm Paul. You're listening to Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.